desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever time of day it may be in your time zone, prolific as they are. Every single one of them covered by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, my honor and privilege to be escorting you through yet another weekend. All right. First, I want to do a total free book promo for Michael Crichton. Oh, my God. You know, I'm an avid reader, really avid. I devour books. I read and I get off very late in the morning when I do work, and so I'm a night owl all the time. And then when I finally do settle into bed, I get involved in a book, and baby, that's it. If it's a good one, I can't stop. I'm sure many of the avid readers out there are familiar with that problem. Anyway, rarely, as many books as I read, rarely do I say, man, this is one you've got to read. But, man, this is one you got to read. It's Michael Crichton's Prey. Now, I don't know how I've read State of Fear, so I'm late on Prey, and I don't know how I missed Prey, but let me read you from the back of the book. In the Nevada desert, it's always the Nevada desert. In the Nevada desert, an experiment has gone horribly wrong. A cloud of nanoparticles, micro-robots, has escaped from the laboratory. This cloud is self-sustaining, self-reproducing, intelligent, and learns from experience. For all practical purposes, it is alive. It has been programmed as a predator. It is evolving swiftly, becoming more deadly with each passing hour. Every attempt to destroy it has failed. And now we are the prey. That should be enough to get you started. And it's one of those, I can't put it down, and I'm halfway through it, and I'm already angry because I'm halfway through it, which means I only have half to go. That happens to me with books. I wonder how many of you are that way. When you get one so good, that you're savoring every page, and it's getting shorter, and you're almost done, and you just know the next book you pick up is not got a chance of being that good. Well, that's Prey. So look for it, grab it, whatever. All right, let us quickly look at the usual depressing world news. No exception tonight, I might add. It's the second anniversary of the fall of Saddam's regime, the toppling of the statue and all of that symbolism and all the rest of it. And, of course, there were thousands, if not millions, of happy, thankful, screaming Iraqis saying, thank you, America, in the streets, right? Not. Tens of thousands of supporters of a militant Shiite cleric filled central Baghdad streets Saturday and demanded that American soldiers go home, marking the second anniversary of Baghdad's fall with shouts of no, no to Satan. That would be us, right? Or Satan. We saved them from a brutal dictator who tortures and kills, and we're Satan. Is there no end to the thanks you get? To the west of the capital, 5,000 protesters issue similar demands in the Sunni Triangle city of Ramali. Make that Ramadi. Reflecting a growing impatience with the U.S.-led occupation and the slow pace of returning control to an infant Iraqi government. So there's no end to the punishment one gets for trying to do something good for people. Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles got married, and that just led the news and everything, and I don't know, to me it's a big so what. The British royals are okay, but I don't know. I don't care what Prince Charles does, and I wonder how many Americans really do. Cardinals, this, of course, is going to be interesting. Cardinals began an intensive period of silence and prayer before their conclave to choose the next pope, saying Saturday they would now stop speaking publicly to protect the very strict secrecy surrounding the centuries-old tradition. This is going to be something for all of you to watch. It's really, really, really going to be interesting. In a moment, that was as much of interest as I could drag out of the normal world news. In a moment, the rest of the news, as Paul would say, and some of it is doggone interesting. Would you like... am every bit as fascinated, maybe even more so, with holes in the ground as I am with space travel. We know less about what's beneath our feet than we do what's beyond our atmosphere. You know, that's fact. Well, I've got two stories to stand your hair right on end if you're one of those type people. Story number one, we'll just get it boiling up a little. Hole drilled to bottom of Earth's crust. Breakthrough to mantle looms. That is a headline. Scientists said this week that they had drilled into the lower section of Earth's crust for the first time and were poised to break through to the mantle in coming years. The Integrated Ocean Drilling Program, you see they're doing that out at Ocean, seeks the elusive MOHO, a boundary formerly known as the Mokrocivic Discontinuity. It marks the division between the Earth's brittle outer crust and the hotter, softer mantle. The depths of the MOHO vary. This latest report, which drilled 4,644 feet below the ocean seafloor, appears to have been about 1,000 feet off to the side of where it should have been to pierce the MOHO. So, in other words, they got down there quite a ways, and they began going off to the side instead of drilling down to the soft, chewy center. The new hole, which took nearly 8 weeks to drill, is the third deepest ever made. The rock collection brought back to the surface, providing new info about the planet's composition. One of the scientists said it will provide important clues on how ocean crust forms. Already the types of rocks recovered show that conventional interpretation of the Earth's evolution are oversimplifying many of the features of the ocean's crust. So in other words, what they're finding does not exactly coincide with what they thought they would find way down there. The latest drilling was done at the Atlantis Massif, known at the intersection of Mid-Atlantic Ridge and the Atlantis Fracture Zone, two plates of the planet's broken crust. The seafloor of this region is therefore easier to reach, you see. It's not clear whether drilling should continue at the new hole or if they should begin another hole in yet another effort to reach the mantle. Such work is not likely to begin again in the next year, said Barbara John, a University of Wyoming geologist and one of the co-chief scientists on the expedition. We need to evaluate all the data we have from the cruise and reanalyze the seismic data to determine whether it's better to deepen the current hole or drill elsewhere, or maybe even collect additional seismic data to better constrain where to drill. Now, this next story, I love. I love it for its entertainment value, and I guess it's somewhat entertaining in a way to imagine this, but I'm not so sure it's a great idea. The headline is NASA Meets Hollywood, Real Mission Proposed to the Earth's Core. And this is the senior science writer, Robert Roy Britt. A Hollywood-like proposal to explore the center of the Earth, listen carefully now, folks, calls for exploding a crack in the planet's surface and then dropping a probe in behind tons of molten iron, which would sink and then forge a path all the way to the core of the Earth. The plan is not ready for prime time, its creator told Space.com, but neither is it pie in the sky. Exploring Earth's belly is ambitious in a scientific sense and could yield valuable data. The solid inner core, actually, rotates faster than the outer core, which is fluid and is responsible for our magnetic field. But scientists don't know exactly why all this is so, nor do they know the exact composition or temperature of the core. If further research showed the core mission could actually work, it would be comparable in dollar terms with many space projects, said David Stevenson, a Caltech planetary scientist who worked on several missions for NASA. Stevenson explains his idea in an article entitled A Modest Proposal for the May 15th issue of the journal Nature. So this is good stuff, folks. Let's continue. Stevenson figures, now, see if you're ready for this, that all you do is take a nuclear device, big one, would likely be the best way, he says, to blast the necessary gap as long and deep as several football fields and about a foot wide, 30 centimeters. The event would be commensurate with an earthquake measuring about 7 on the Richter scale. At least 100,000 tons of hot iron would be poured instantly into the crack, along with a well-protected probe about the size of a grapefruit. Now, once you set that condition up, the crack, he says, is self-perpetuating. Think of that, a self-perpetuating crack. He explains the weight of the iron, which is much denser than the Earth's outer regions, would open a gap all the way to the outer portion of the planet's core about 1,860 miles below. The probe would fall at about 10 miles per hour, 16 kilometers per hour, as the crack closes up behind it. The weeks-long mission would seek to measure the temperature, electrical conductivity, and chemical composition of the core. Stevenson said the amount of iron needed is equal to what's produced on Earth in about a week or less. We've spent more than $10 billion in unplanned missions to the planet, said Stevenson, but we've only been down about 10 kilometers, 6.2 miles, into our very own planet. Most of the universe is above us and empty. Stevenson notes, yet, quote, the part below is crammed with interesting stuff and is mostly unknown, end quote. A spacecraft sends its observations back, of course, as we know, by radio, but radio signals don't propagate through the planet. So, the Earth probe would relay data to the surface by deforming itself to create low-intensity waves akin to sending sound from a loudspeaker. Think of the probe like a throbbing heart, said Stevenson. It will set the neighboring material in motion, and that will cause a sound wave to travel away from the probe, in fact, all the way to the Earth's surface. The idea is a bit reminiscent of a recently released movie, The Core, in which Terranauts travel into the planet to jump-start the core, which has stopped rotating and begun to cause all manner of peril at the surface. In an email interview, Stevenson said he first conceived a core mission many years ago, and that the scientific connection between the fiction and his fact-based proposal is negligible. But once again, ladies and gentlemen, we would create a crack in the Earth, and we would do this with a very large nuclear device, which would produce about a 7 on the Richter scale, kaboom. And then the idea is this crack would continue to open and close behind the probe that would be rocketing toward its center. Now, I'd like to see a show of hands on this one. How many of you would like to see a nuclear device exploded, causing a crack in the Earth, and then a probe sent to its very heart? Is this a good or bad idea? Anyway, NASA involved, they've had some pretty strange ideas over the years. One of my favorites was that in order to combat global warming, it was suggested that an object, perhaps a large, you know, rock, space rock, perhaps 2-3 miles in diameter, would be reoriented so it made a very close pass to Earth, knocking Earth from its present orbit and moving it a little further away from the sun, producing cooling, definite cooling. And then, say the scientists, when we get global warming under control, we simply arrange the passage of yet another close rock, returning us to our original orbit. At the time, I didn't think that was too good of a great idea exactly, and I still am not necessarily in favor of it. But I would say this is right along those lines. Put a nuke down a crack, make a giant crevice, and then have this thing that virtually falls right to the very center of the Earth. But God, I would follow it, wouldn't you? Wouldn't it be interesting? Aren't you dying to know what's really down in the middle of the earth? I know I am. I don't think they know. I think the middle of the earth is every bit as mysterious as what is beyond our atmosphere. I got a very, very interesting... I don't know why this touched me the way it did, but it did. It says, howdy, Art. You might not know this, but ferrets are very smart animals with very distinct personalities. I've never known two ferrets whose personalities were alike. They make great pets, but they are hard and expensive to take care of. Not exactly a pet for everyone. They are not at all like hamsters or gerbils. They love to interact with people to the extent of almost requiring it. My wife and I have 9 of them, and they keep us busy. Anyway, I posted in the ferret mailing list, one of the biggest ferret forums, about my experience with a ferret of mine named Mocha. Mocha was a small, dark, sable female ferret. She was one of my favorites. Well, 2 Christmases ago, she got caught. She actually caught the flu from me. Now, I didn't know that was possible. I did not know that humans could pass flu to their animals, but he says Mocha caught flu from him. As a result, she caught a secondary bacterial infection and went into her nervous system. We lost her shortly afterward. It was horrible, as you can imagine. Yes, I can. Losing a pet is like losing a child. When Mocha was alive, she had the habit of crawling up my leg to say hi and see what was going on with my computer. About a week or so after she died, I was sitting at my computer, and I felt Mocha nudging my ankle, just as she's always done, as she had always done before she died, just before she climbed up my leg. Well, I looked down. Of course, nothing was there. At first, I was startled. That's how real it seemed to me. My emotions went rampant. I closed my eyes just so I could absorb it. Tears came. Over the course of the next 2 weeks or so, I'd feel her nudging my feet every once in a while, almost always when I wouldn't have expected it. Every time I'd close my eyes and try to absorb the feeling of her. I always talked to her. I told her how much I missed her. I was sorry I gave her the flu. Eventually, when I felt the nudge, it was like an old friend visiting. I would manage to sneak in and smile. I'd sneak in a smile with my tears. After a couple of weeks, it did stop. I had always thought that she had come back to say goodbye. Since I was working when she actually died, my wife was the one to have taken her to the vets, and we lost her shortly thereafter. My wife never experienced any of the visits I received, maybe because she was there to say goodbye. Now, this is what I hadn't expected. Shortly after I posted this story, I got a couple of responses from ferret owners who'd had the same kind of thing going on with them, one of them with a cat. At any rate, thank you very, very much for the email. And, you know, I had a cat once named Yesu. And Yesu got shot. Somebody shot Yesu. And Yesu, anyway, there are many times, I wasn't there, I also was not there when Yesu died, but many times I have felt the presence of this cat that was so, so very close to me. And I, too, talked to Yesu. So I don't know. I don't know. Are these real manifestations, whether it's a human or an animal, sort of visiting after physical death, or, more likely, are they manifestations of our own brain? Well, of course, things like we do on the show, like the voices that are picked up on electronic equipment that we play here on the air, those kinds of things certainly have got to make you go, hmm. I will continue to explain. In fact, tomorrow night, Dr. Raymond Moody is going to be on this program, and it'll be dead down that alley once again. No pun intended. I've got another very interesting story for you about a man who was driving his car and died. At least he believes that's what occurred. In fact, he sent me a picture of the accident, and clearly nobody could have come out of this alive. And he did. And in a way, he didn't, depending on whether you believe what he has to say. But we'll get to that story when we come back. Bottom of the hour, we're going to be doing open line, so listen very carefully. The phone numbers are a bit different on the weekend. We'll have them for you in a moment, along with the story of the man who died, but didn't exactly, from the high desert in the middle of the night on the weekend. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
On the east side of Chicago, back in the USA, back in the bad old days. In the heat of a summer night, in the land of the dollar bill, when the town of Chicago died, and they talk about it still. When a man named Al Capone tried to make that town his own, and he called his gang to war, the forces of the law. I heard my mama cry.
Like to meet the idiot who canceled Dead Like Me. That's all I've got to say. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? I want you to listen very closely because the numbers are a bit different on the weekend, and here they are.
To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and Dead Like Me was on Showtime with Ellen Moth. I interviewed her. I was so impressed with that program, remember? Well, anyway, some idiot canceled it. I must admit, the second season drifted away from the original concept. All they would have had to have done is to resurrect it properly, is to return what they had done in the first season, which was absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. If you ever get a chance to see the first season of Dead Like Me, you don't want to miss it. And they should return to that and bring it out somewhere else, because it just was brilliant stuff. In a moment, the story of the man who died, but, well, didn't. I don't know, I just liked this story. It's just an email. And here it is. I had an experience in June of 2003 that changed the way I viewed death. You know, I used to believe when it was over. You know, worms crawl in, worms crawl out. Then I had a tragic wreck in our Explorer. I flipped it, and I've got a picture of it here. And, you know, you wouldn't make it out of that. Anyway, he goes on, here's where my beliefs changed. I think in the universe that I was in when this happened, I actually did die. But when I opened my eyes, I was looking at a lit dashboard. I crawled out of the truck, talked to the police, was taken to a nearby hospital for observations, released, no ticket, no injuries. Something seemed very odd about all of this. Then I realized I did die in that accident. But for me, I continued in another universe, just as if time continued. I apologize if this seems confusing, but what I mean is that I absolutely left behind a family in mourning. But from my perspective, nothing changed. When I switched universes, I just picked up where I left off. And now I believe that this is what happens to everyone when they die. It is only from our perspective. From theirs, something else happens and they have no idea, but they continue on as if nothing happened. This would also explain ghosts. We're simply catching a glimpse of that alternate universe where our dead loved ones and others have moved and are living normal, everyday lives. Would this mean we live forever? I don't know. But who says that when we jump from one universe to another that we must continue from the point of origin? You may jump back to your infinite self and start from there with no memory beyond that age. At any rate, I have a very disturbing feeling that in another universe, my children, my wife, are still mourning my death. I wish I could console them. I thought that was pretty doggone interesting. Oh, there is one more thing I've got to get in, and it concerns, and what idiot? You know, in my state, Nevada, is a very, very popular destination for RVs. RVs bring lots and lots of money into the, you know, our state. Now we've got Senate Bill 412, which has been introduced into the Nevada legislature, Senate actually, to get this. Stop overnight RV parking on any public lot in the state. And it gives a place where you can view the bill. The bill was introduced in the Committee on Government Affairs and, if passed, would prohibit RV parking on any kind of public parking lot anywhere in the state. Here's a little bit of the text of the bill. Quote, each board of county commissioners shall, by ordinance, prohibit an attended vehicle, recreational vehicle, motorhome, or travel trailer from parking overnight in a parking facility which is dedicated or intended for commercial use or for use by patrons of a shop, store, or any other business. Parking facility means a parking deck, parking garage, parking structure, paved or unpaved parking lot that members of the public regularly enter, are reasonably likely to enter, or are invited or permitted to enter as invitees or licensees. The term does not include a recreational vehicle, a park, rather, as defined in NRS so-and-so. Anyway, due to the way this is worded, it is likely these restrictions will apply to any publicly accessible parking lot. That would include, for example, casinos, truck stops, dirt or gravel, boondock parking areas throughout the state. What idiot thought this up? Do you have any idea how much money it would cost the state of Nevada? Now, look, let's not, here in Nevada, begin to emulate California's idiocy, huh? You can pass laws until the cows come home, I guess is the motto in Sacramento. But here in Nevada, I would not have thought such an idiotic, stupid idea would even be proposed, and I can't imagine it would be passed. Certainly would cost a lot of dollars, and frankly, I doubt it would be particularly well enforced, because most towns, cities, counties realize that an awful lot of tourist revenue comes from people who park their RVs, so I think it's a dumb idea. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello? Hello?
Hello, Art.
Yes, hello.
This is Steve from Cleveland, listening to you on the big one, WTAM.
Hey, Steve.
I just wanted to thank you for, especially because I'm a Gulf War vet, all your programs with Joyce Riley. I've been wrestling with the VA about Gulf War syndrome. The cause that I got from them was cigarette smoke.
Cigarette smoke?
Cigarette smoke.
Well, that's as dangerous here as it is in Iraq.
Yeah, I guess it is. But, again, just wanted to thank you for all your years. I'm a night worker, and a lot of us vets really appreciate your programs.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Art.
You're very welcome. That's it, huh? Well, you're very welcome. Cigarette smoke. I've depleted uranium, I thought, perhaps, or something of that nature, but cigarette smoke. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
This is Daniel calling from the socialist idiocy state formerly known as California.
Well, I meant no real insult.
That's true.
Simply, you guys, you know, pass an awful lot of laws. I mean, laws about this, laws about that, and here we're doing something stupid on our own over here, so.
Okay, scientifically burrowing into the Earth's core,
yes,
is undoubtedly a cover story for a doomsday device similar to a cobalt missile pointed at the ionosphere, but in the opposite direction. Mm. Because according to published reports, insiders like former President George Herbert Walker Bush and others are aware that the Earth's core is inhabited by intraterrestrial beings who are regularly visited by extraterrestrial spacecraft through two portals of entry, a volcanic island on the North Pole, and first discovered by Admiral Byrd, and an underground cooperative base in Antarctica built by the Nazis. Therefore, burrowing into the territory also known as hell would mean war on hell and hell for us.
Mm. Could be bad. I don't know about all you just said, but, well, of course, nor can I deny it, because we know so very little about what's really in the Earth, right? I heard all the stories about the Nazis and, you know, the whole the North Pole and all the rest of it, and I have no idea whether that's myth or reality, but truth is, we certainly don't know very much about what we walk on, what's inside, what really is way down there. Is it what they think? Is it what they imagine? Or could there be a world, could there literally be a world beneath our feet? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, can I hear that?
I'm afraid we've got a bad connection, sir.
We're starting in the middle of the earth.
Oh, man. That's a really bad connection. Try redialing us, please. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. I'm Pat calling from Minneapolis, 1500 AM KSTP.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Excellent. I don't know. This is the first time I've ever tried calling, really, and I got through. I'm kind of amazed. It's cool. It's cool to talk to you, Mr. Bell.
Thank you.
I've listened to you for quite a while. So, I don't know. I guess I got a strong view against drilling into the earth like that, because it, I mean, I don't know. Just thinking about like the plates and.
Could conceivably go wrong?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. It could. There was a movie where, now of course you know Hollywood, but there was a movie you know where they had set a bomb off on one of the coastlines and it sent the one of the plates moving at a rapid speed and they had to detonate another bomb to, and that's what I was thinking of. And one other thing I had was about. Going to Mars to look for microscopic life, and I don't know, it's just, I think that's just a bad idea.
Another bad idea. Well, there are many who believe that bringing microscopic life back from Mars could conceivably be a poor idea. That there could be some microorganism, and a microorganism, to be fair, is quite likely to exist on Mars, that we would not be prepared for, that our immune systems, for example, might never have seen, well, would never have seen, therefore would be unprepared to combat, and, well, away you go. Away we go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello?
Hey, what's up?
You are up. Turn your radio off, please.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. I'll wait.
All right, I got a story for you.
All right.
My friend, he said he was in his backyard, and he was, the motion light kept going on and off, and, he saw something out in the back, and he didn't know what it was. He said it looked kind of like a deer, but kind of like an alien. And all of a sudden, like, I thought he was crazy. I didn't know what he was talking about. And then a year later, we were out on his back porch with a bunch of buddies, and the guy that was with us, his grandmother lived across the street. And turn that down. And the guy lived across, his grandmother lived across the street. And I'm choking here. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, you're choking because someone turned the radio on. I try to warn people.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to make you sound like an idiot because you're going to hear your own voice.
Yeah, that's what they're doing, basically.
Well,
all right. Keep that down. All right,
Turn it off all the way. Tell them turn it off.
Okay, it's all the way off.
All right.
All right. And he said that his grandmother used to tell stories before this kid's house was there that people used to see centaurs in the woods.
I see that, and I hear the radio, and they're not going to cooperate with you. I'm sorry. Let that sort of serve as a lesson to all. I know that your buddies or your friends would like to hear you on the radio, and that's a big deal. Well, if they want to do that, they need to go to a completely different part of the house and listen. It's got to be out of your earshot, because for obvious reasons, for broadcast, we delay everything by about 6 or 7 seconds. The time during which you have an opportunity to make a career decision if something is said. And so everything you say comes out of the radio, actually, 6 or 7 seconds later. And if you have the radio turned up, you're going to hear that, and it is going to confuse you to the point that you're going to lose your train of thought completely, and you're not going to sound coherent. And certainly you don't want that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Turn your radio off, please.
Yeah, oh, yes, sir. You betcha. I'm sorry. I wasn't prepared for you to jump on so quick.
Well, I don't screen call. So anyway, what's up?
Well, you know, I think that digging in the middle of the core is a bad idea.
Another vote no, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, what if it is all molten lava, and because of the way the air and the atmosphere hits it, it starts squirting out like a squirt gun, you know, and all of a sudden the earth starts flying all over the place.
Well, you're both...
You know, or the crack gets bigger, they can't stop it, it just starts cracking, you know what I mean?
Worse yet, sir, how about this? What if it's pressurized in there, and, you know, we've all blown up a balloon and then gone, see the blue balloon fly? See, that could be bad.
Let's say goodbye to mankind then, huh? Yeah, I think that's a bad idea, to be honest. Curiosity once killed a cat, you know?
Yes, and who knows what it might do to 6 billion humans.
Oh, man, buddy. I mean, or cover the earth with lava?
Nevertheless, I'm fascinated by what might be down there.
Well, could be some great things we find down there. Maybe certain elements or minerals and things that are cures for things. You never know.
You but never know. Maybe even, well, hell. What if drilling down that deep actually opened a portal to hell? What if all those voices recorded in Siberia suddenly were freed, had an escape route? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art.
Yes.
Hi. This is calling from St. Louis.
Yes, sir.
First time caller. I was introduced to your enlightening program by... Actually, a television program, I'm sure you're aware of, Peter Jennings.
Oh, yes.
On the UFO study. And just wanted to let you know how grateful I am for your broadcast. I wanted to ask you, have you ever touched upon the subject of bovine spongiform encephalitis?
Yes.
Or commonly known as mad cow disease?
I certainly have. And as a matter of fact, they've got a show, my friend Whitley Strieber, I think coming up this next weekend, has a show which actually asks the question, is Alzheimer's actually mad cow disease?
Mm-hmm.
There's very little difference, you know,
right,
in the two, and I wonder if that could be true. Colm Kelleher, I think, is going to be the guest, and he would seem to suggest that it could be, that Alzheimer's is the same thing as mad cow. Mad cow is Alzheimer's.
Right. That, it could be a variant, and if I could share with you my concern. From what I understand, mad cow disease is caused by a brand new infectious agent called a prion.
Right.
Up until now, prions were never known to exist. Consequently, there is no therapy for infection by prions. And furthermore, the incubation period from the time of infection till the onset of disease, which is known to be 100% fatal, can be anywhere from 20 to 30 years.
That's right.
And what bothers me is that the federal government has not mandated to the producers of cattle that they stop feeding animal byproducts
Well, I think we have in this country, or at least certain animal byproducts. It kind of makes you wonder about the burger joint you were at 30 years ago, though, huh?
Well, I mean, you know, the simple solution would be to put a ban on feeding animal byproducts. Right now, it's only on a voluntary basis, and it just, you know, we have no idea how many potential people are currently infected until years from now. So maybe we can start a little fire and get something done.
Well, the whole thing is kind of scary.
Right.
And it could be, that all of us, or virtually all of us, to some degree or another, if that would be true, could be infected. And as I said, it sure does make you wonder about, I mean, I have loved hamburgers. I have always been a hamburger guy. Since I was a little kid, I have loved hamburgers and ate scads of them. So I hate reading about this stuff, but you never know. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, I was just listening to this gentleman that was talking about the mad cow disease.
That's right, yes.
And there is stuff called doxycycline. That's the only thing that will pull this stuff out of your system.
Huh.
It was made specifically for this, and they've known it all along and never told anybody. And I know because we had it, we got checked, and we got rid of it.
Wait a minute. Let me reset this. How do you know you had it?
We got tested for it. There's a test, what you call a PCR test. And you go to your health department or your doctor, you get a PCR test done, they check it. If you've got it, you take doxycycline for 2 weeks, and it pulls it out of your system. It's the only antibiotic that's made like this.
I didn't think it was even responsive to antibiotics.
Yes, it is. This is the only one that will do it.
Huh.
It was made specifically to pull stuff out of your system.
Well, that's certainly news to me.
No, honey, it's been out for quite a while in Newswatch magazine. The church got the information out about this, and there's other. I've got all the information on it. My dad was with the VA at the time they did this.
Do you think that mad cow and Alzheimer's are one and the same?
I'll tell you what it makes. HIV, mad cow disease, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, MS, fibromyalgia, Klopstock syndrome, Crohn's disease, leukemia, and cancer. It does all of this.
Well, I'd be the last to deny the possibility. Thank you very much. There are many who believe that cancer may be virus-based. Actually may turn out to, you know, we don't know what causes cancer. We don't know what causes cells to suddenly become dividing, start dividing in a very accelerated, unnatural way. We have no idea what does that. We'd have it cured. There are some who think it is virus-based, and it may turn out to be. Who knows? Anyway, that's what they're going to talk about on Dreamland. I thought it was timely in view of that mention, Alzheimer's. Could it actually be mad cow disease? All right, coming up in a few moments, the most loved, and hated guest that ever appears on Coast to Coast AM, Major Ed Dames. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm.
Or the scent of a sound, or the strength of an oak with roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hoard, and to use them to help.
Take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Absolutely the most loved and hated guest on this program. I mean, people are absolutely passionate about Major Ed Ames, but even his most severe critics listen to every single word he says. He's a very controversial man, the world's foremost remote viewing teacher, Edward A. Dames, Major U.S. Army retired, is a decorated military intelligence officer and an original member of the U.S. Army Prototype Remote Viewing Training Program. And certainly he was that. I have read his entire military record. Other remote viewers have referred to Ed many times. He served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit. Currently serves as executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, which is a private consulting group. The technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero, a Tom Cruise Paula Wagner production, Ed coached Sir Ben Kingsley, who played the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor in the movie as well. Again, the most loved and hated guest we have on this program, Major Ed Dames. You know what? Just before we break, let me serve up the usual warning. A lot of the material that you're about to hear is going to potentially be very disturbing. And so rather than have you become disturbed, unable to sleep or have bad dreams, you should turn off the radio now. Again, a warning, children ought not be listening to this. I would think that their parents should exercise parental control and take that radio away from them. Even the parents, some of them, ought not hear some of the material we're going to discuss. He's controversial for a reason. His nickname is Dr. Doom. And that, too, is for a good reason. Extremely controversial, and right here in a moment. Radio. Something we're going to touch on with Ed shortly is very disturbing indeed. You may recall last week and or perhaps even this week, if you heard the pre-play, that is to say the show that ran before this one, I believe it was the EVP show, electronic voice phenomena, you know, voices from wherever. Well, Ed is going to comment on the little child's voice, the origin of the child's voice, and on EVP itself. So, in other words, he's done some sort of remote viewing on this subject. I'm very much looking forward to that. But first, there was a second Indonesian area earthquake, a very, very large earthquake. Fortunately, no tsunami associated with it. But when it occurred, I noticed the website at coasttocoastam.com put up a headline saying, talking about the quake and saying, Ed Dames hit, ? And indeed, Ed, on the last program, predicted another really major quake in that area, albeit perhaps a couple thousand miles from where it actually happened. But in magnitude and so forth, very, very close, Ed. So you answer the question. I mean, the headline was Ed Dames hit, ? Was it an Ed Dames hit?
Oh, good evening, Art. It, I think that it was a hit, and we're getting better. It's been 21 years, and this skill and the science behind it is evolving. So you're going to see me stick my neck out more and more, but I'm not really sticking my neck out. We've actually discovered some ways of placing coordinates, Cartesian coordinates, and dates on events. In fact, I had another very a very serious event predicted, and I have a map on your Coast to Coast website showing Mount Tarawera in the North Island in New Zealand.
Okay, I'm going to navigate to the website like about a billion other people right now. I would say, no matter what, certainly your last prediction was close enough in most respects that I think I would certainly consider it a hit.
We knew it would be Indonesia, but getting the exact coordinates down, the latitude, as you see, the latitude is very precise.
Yes.
Okay. Now, that's not difficult for us to do, and it does not take long. Latitude lines don't move. I mean, as the Earth spins around,
that's
the latitude
right.
line stays the same.
That's
so
right.
for remote viewers, it's pretty easy to sense north or south of a given line when we use our terrain index reference system. But longitude is more difficult and takes at least twice as much work. It would take, for instance, about a day and a half, sometimes 2 days, to work out longitude.
Well, I recall when you made that prediction, as well as a couple of others, you said that you're going to start really sticking your neck out in order to prove to the world that remote viewing is real.
Art, that's not the reason I'm doing it.
Well, that's what you said.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the reason that we picked that venue is to attempt to save lives, and we're getting better as we get better and more precise in these predictions, for instance.
Well, and also prove remote viewing is real. I mean, that's got to be a major goal. Come on.
I suppose that is one.
Well, sure it is. I mean, why else would you make a gigantic public prediction about an event as large as that earthquake or what you've got that we'll talk about here on the webpage now? I mean, save lives, yes, I'm sure, but also from your point of view, to validate remote viewing in the eyes of the public.
Actually, the gold project that we have, Art, I mentioned that if you have a little bit more patience, we're bringing you some gold from a treasure trove. That, I think, is more telling about the efficacy and the validity of remote viewing. People really perk up when they see gold rather than events.
I know. I perk up when I see gold.
Yeah.
So what do you mean you're bringing me gold? So you're going to bring gold to me, large amounts of it, and just leave it for me, right?
No. We're going to have
no?
a photo op with you, Art. And,
a photo op.
Leave a little bit with you, but no, we're going to use it to good stead.
But, Ed, I really need it all to examine it slowly over the years and determine the validity of your claim.
I'm sure that's the case, Art.
So when,
maybe a doubloon or so.
When, Ed, when will the gold show?
It should be no later than June. We just came out of the field on a child search, and we're back in the field next week on a child search.
Well, Ed, that's so, my birthday, June. So it's a birthday present then.
What day?
I think
what
of it that
day,
way.
Art?
June 17th.
June
17th would be a wonderful day.
All right, my friend. We'll shoot for June 17th for our gold delivery.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm serious. That packs a lot more punch than to people because it...
No, it doesn't. Look, hits are what pack punch. When you get a hit, like with the earthquake, yeah, people take notice. They start listening harder, whether they like you or not. You know a lot of people don't like you, Ed.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know. Yes.
Why do you think that is? It's not just simple dislike, Ed.
Because
it's passionate, deep, throbbing dislike.
Oh, and I used to brief at the old executive office of the White House. I mentioned this before. The staffers, the White House staffers, were tired of hearing about Russian megatonnage and throw weights in terms of nuclear weapons. But when I briefed on extremely exotic futuristic weapons that were very painful and would kill you, and not vaporize you, but kill you very slowly and extremely painfully.
Huh.
And they did not like to hear that.
Me either.
So they loathed my appearance at briefings.
I think that it's, well, I mean, this is like a briefing when you come on the program and you sort of lay out, you have to admit, you do somewhat. Well, you're like our national newscasts, really. You tend to dwell on the negative, but it's the nature, I guess, of remote viewing and event viewing, and it's the nature of humanity to be interested in the negative stuff. That's why the newscast put it on. That's why people watch it.
Well, I'm very human as well. I'm a very warm human being, too. And I'm going to tell you some things tonight that are warm.
Warm, really? Warm for Ed means, you know, only 5,000 die.
So, for instance, with the next use of a nuclear weapon that I've been forecasting for years.
There's a nice warm area to begin, yes.
Right. Now, on that, on something like where human decision, the vicissitudes of human minds are involved in varying conditions.
Yes.
It is easy to see the event for remote viewers. In fact, any trained remote viewer can see this next use of a nuclear weapon and won't take long for even an intermediate skilled viewer to determine where that is. But
you've been saying this so long, Ed. When do you suppose, I know that's the trick question, but how close are we getting?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting into now.
Okay.
Now, geophysical events, earthquakes and the volcano that I'm forecasting for New Zealand, those kinds of things, humans aren't involved in that. And apparently, we know this empirically as remote viewers, now that we can place dates closer to events, if not right on them, soon. It's far easier to do that for a geophysical, natural disaster or catastrophe than it is for a man-made catastrophe. So in the case of this next use of a nuclear weapon on the Korean Peninsula,
yes,
we may not be able to get that close because humans are involved in the decision-making process, but we're going to give it a shot anyway. In fact, we're working on that now, as well as the beginning of the kill shot, this very serious.
I want to cover all of these. Let's specifically cover the Mount Tauroa eruption. What is it you see is going to happen, where and when?
Okay, now the reason that this one is easier to do than, in this case, we're looking at a next major global catastrophe as remote viewers in terms of forecasting.
Okay.
In the case of the earthquake in March, which took over 1,000 lives, 1,000 souls, that, by the way, is really our MO in this. That event was very difficult to pin down because we're looking at an underwater, undersea event. We're actually sketching the shelves moving.
Right.
Now we have no way to know where we are. We know that the event is an earthquake and shelves are moving, but when we pop up above the surface of the water, figuratively speaking, and we attempt to look for the nearest significant feature that we always do as remote viewers to get a fix on where we are globally.
Right.
The area in Indonesia is so homogeneous, particularly where the earthquake occurred. It's so homogeneous that everything looks the same. So even when we sketch the nearest unique features, it's very difficult to pinpoint where we are in Asia. So we had to go with just the geofix techniques and the geofix positions. In the case of this next event, which happens to be not an earthquake but a volcano,
mm-hmm.
an extremely powerful, dangerous eruption, very, very powerful, an eruption that we've sketched that is potentially very deadly to the people that live there. In fact, the last time this mountain erupted, the last time this area erupted, it took 150 people with it. This time, the potential is much larger in terms of death.
All right. But
the volcano itself is so unique in terms of its geomorphology and the way it appears to the eye that when I sketch it, it's very easy to go to all the volcanoes in New Zealand, because that's where our new techniques took us, and match up the sketch with that particular mountain. Very easy indeed.
All right, so let's nail it down. Not everybody has the web. You're predicting an eruption on?
In the month of November, highly likely in the month of November 2005.
This year?
Yes, this year.
Mount Tauroa, is it?
It's Tarawera.
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 And this is
on New Zealand's central North Island.
All right.
The last time it erupted in 1886, it killed 150 people.
And this time?
The potential is much larger. That's why I'm going on the air with this and sticking my...
Is there a way that you can compare the size of this predicted eruption with, say, Pinatubo?
Oh, I would say it is as large or more... It looks like it's more violent than Pinatubo.
Okay.
Very much more violent.
All right. Then that one is duly recorded. And you know, do you think that word, I mean, it's a long time now, relatively anyway, between now and November, that word will make it to the area, that anybody will act on this prediction?
Yeah, I think a few people will take vacations that live on that plateau. I really do. I have friends in the area that live in the area as well, too, so I'll make sure they're out of there. But the word will travel.
All right.
Your show makes it, I mean, coast to coast is heard in New Zealand.
It certainly is. All right, so that's a big one, and it is recorded. Now, regarding the next use of a nuke, for years you've been saying that on the Korean Peninsula, and you still think it will be on the Korean Peninsula. You haven't changed that, have you?
No, not at all, because that, again, was not that difficult to establish. At the time, though, next, when's next? We did not have the tools or the techniques or the evolved methods to really do anything in terms of next.
Okay, well, what do you know now?
Nothing yet. Nothing yet. But by this time, I'd say a month from now, we'll know. We'll be close. But do you really want to know is the question. You really want, for instance,
well, I don't know. Do
they
you really
just dropped
want
out of talks with the Chinese.
Do you really want, even, well, they did, I know. Do you really want to tell? It's not so much whether I want to know. You know, I'm not that curious, for example, about my own future. I wouldn't really want to know. However, for the sake of your credibility, I would think that if you know, you should tell. Yes.
Yeah, I'll give it some thought. But we are going to tag a date onto that, and I'll tell you what: if it's this year, and if it's before a geophysical, if this man-made catastrophe happens to pop up on our timeline before the next geophysical catastrophe, I will call you personally, and then we can talk about it.
All right, Ed does do that, by the way, from time to time. He calls me personally with information. Very interesting stuff, and I appreciate those calls, Ed. All right. Last week, and for a long time now, I've done something that some people scoff at, and others are kind of with me, and they think this electronic voice phenomena business is really interesting. I mean, you look at it, and you can't find holes in it. You can't find any reason for it to be faked. It doesn't sound fake, frankly. It sounds like the real McCoy. I've looked very hard at it, Ed, and that's why I've had guests again and again and again with this electronic voice phenomena, because, by God, I think there really is something to it. And I know, I guess, you've looked at EVP both in a specific and general way for us tonight. Is that correct?
I actually have some experience with it. I integrated it tangentially into a very classified project during the Cold War in 1981. And I can't talk about the project, but my experience with it, I can talk about.
Why can't you talk about it? It's classified.
Because it would embarrass the United States government.
Well, so who cares?
Well, because it's still classified, the project, and even though it didn't go down and work, the project itself, the EVP part, did, and that's what I wanted to talk about.
I'm wondering what interest would the U.S. government have?
I can't even mention the topic, to tell you the truth. Even the topic is...
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, now that's going to have me thinking for a while. What interest would the U.S. government have in EVP? That would be in getting the voices of those who have passed...
That's correct.
Wow. That's just the fact they were interested.
Well, let me just drop a hint.
Please.
We're going to talk about voices of those who passed. But
yes.
Let's say that it were possible, and wouldn't you want to have a dialogue with, let's say, the former head of the KGB, Andropov?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I would, too.
So that's sort of a hint. In other words,
right.
Who would the government be interested in having a conversation with?
Well, he's not home anymore, so what the heck?
Yeah. All right, Ed, hold on. Major Ed Ames, Dr. Doom, his affectionate title, is my guest. Let's see, who would the government most like to talk to? Somebody who has died. That's worth a little thought, isn't it? And were they officially interested, according to Ed? Yes. Oh, this program is so interesting, isn't it? EVP is a subject we're about to be talking about, electronic voice phenomena, the subject of last week's show that stirred so much controversy in the nighttime. I'm Art Bell.
Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and you gotta really wonder in the private world of Major Ed Dames, when he predicts an earthquake's going to occur, a big one, and then when that earthquake does occur, as happened just weeks ago, When it really does occur, what do you think, in private, Major Ed Dames does? Does he go, oh my God, all those people did die? Or does he go, yes! We may never know the answer to that one. I really am pretty well convinced of the credibility of those who do EVP, of the EVP phenomena itself. In fact, Halloween, I got hold of these incredible historical Spiricom tapes, the work that George Meeks was involved in, published the technical details of how to produce the tones that allegedly are used by people on the other side to modulate and therefore communicate in an ongoing, and that's what I played. It was, I don't know, at least 40 minutes long, as I recall. Hard to hear in some places, but in the end, if you digested and listened carefully, it would raise the hair on the back of your neck. I guarantee it was an ongoing, real-time communication with the dead. And it was incredible. God, it was incredible to listen to. And it's just sort of been the latest chapter in my interest in electronic voice phenomena. And Ed's ready to comment on some of it. Tonight it says, EVP, RV findings on the origin of the child's voice recorded on last Saturday's show. You may recall last Saturday we had a child's voice which seemed to be the voice of a child drowning. Ed says, warning, extremely disturbing. Comments on the phenomena itself as well. So, Ed, apparently that was interesting enough to launch you into an investigation of EVP or what?
It was haunting.
Yeah, it was haunting, for sure.
Even for someone like myself who's familiar with EVP and a lot of other phenomenological things. But this one was haunting, and it caught me by surprise. Also, I'm going to bring up the fact that the sound of water is not the voice of the dead. And we're going to talk about some of that in a moment, too. But I want to hark back, if I may, to my own experience with EVP in 1981, when it was tangentially part of this classified project. I was listening to a white noise generator, and I was getting pretty bored and starting to fall asleep. And the first time I heard a voice, I almost jumped out of my skin. This is the first time ever. I just came right out of my skin.
While you were in the military?
Oh, yeah. I was Mr. Enigma, don't forget, in the Army, and then later for Office of Secretary of Defense. So I wore a very strange hat in the government.
White noise, folks, is very interesting. White noise is just... Here, I think that I can cause some. That's white noise, folks. That's white noise. And it's a sort of a combination of all noises. And so it would be a particularly interesting vehicle to produce, to allow some entity or whatever it is, and I'm sure Ed's about to talk to that, to take portions of it and modulate it and create what sounds like a voice. Yes?
Pretty close. Actually, I was using a detuned radio. It's pretty basic.
Okay.
Tuned to just nothing. And I was right on the verge of wakefulness and sleep because that white noise is pretty boring and jejune. But when I heard something that sounded like a voice, I mean, the hair on my back just stood right up. So I thought, okay, that's just because I was falling asleep and imagination. And then I heard it again. And then I hit the switch on that thing and turned that radio off.
Can you recall, were they distinct words? Did you hear it actually say anything?
I can't remember, to be honest with you, at that time. My subsequent work with it, yes, there were distinct voices. Three separate voices.
Do you ever recall it actually speaking a word that you remember?
No, I don't. I was so nonplussed by the experience that I wanted to forget it really quickly.
Huh.
It spooked me. It spooked me bad. Even though I was using it, employing it in this operation, my attempt there was to validate, establish the legitimacy of the phenomenon so that we could use it to support this operation. Now, at that point, I was a little bit questioning whether or not I should have done that. But anyway, that was my entree into the field.
Huh.
Now, there's no microphone that's involved here. The microphones that researchers use are just so I think the public can hear, so other researchers can hear what's going on in the local environment. But all you need is an RF oscillator and some audio output. It could be a tape recorder. It could be
headphones. I sure might buy that. Sure.
Yeah. So because the dead, if it's the dead, and usually it is, they don't have a mouth, right? So they can't use a mouth. The dead have, so it's not the dead's voice. It's not a sonic phenomenon. It's electromagnetic in nature. Very similar to ghosts and apparitions. When an apparition passes through you, through your body, when a ghost passes through you,
yes,
you feel your body react because you have an electromagnetic field, charged field going through your body.
Huh.
In a very similar fashion, these EVPs are, there's sort of vestigial EM patterns that are left behind, but they're not living, and that's an important point.
Okay, but I'm not sure that it's an absolute point, because how do you account for the many times where absolute or the Spiricom experiments, or the many times where the information is quite contemporary and reactive, or obviously reactive to what the experimenter is saying?
I can't. So I want to throw the hypothesis, because that's what it was, or postulate, actually, out the window. And I'm going to do that forever because of what we found out using remote viewing to research the origin of this child's voice. It changed everything I thought about.
So in other words, after last week's program, I admit what was played was extremely, extremely disturbing. I got more emails on it, Ed, you just wouldn't believe.
Art, it's going to get more disturbing in a moment. It's going to get more disturbing in a moment. Because let me talk about the minor thing first.
All right.
And that's the sound of the water. Now, that's not a voice. Even if we're talking about a voice or a disincarnate entity, that water is not a living person.
Right.
Or a dead person. So
right.
How does that get on electromagnetically reproduced? What modulates that?
I have no idea.
Neither do I.
A concept, an idea, a memory? I don't know, Ed.
I think a memory is the closest that we've come to in order to establish some element in terms of modeling the mechanics and the dynamics of this. But what I'm about to say leads me to think that there's no way that the best of my professionals and I can model this because of what we found out in terms of the child's voice.
All right, might as well do it. What did you find out?
Brendan and Cook and Barbara McBeath were in this mental hospital recording.
Yes.
Right, and even they admit it's the strangest thing they've ever recorded. Right.
Right.
And here's this child. There's the sound of apparently what sound. Of course, appearances can be deceiving, but it sounds like a child's voice. A young child can be heard saying, "Help me! I can't breathe. I couldn't breathe." And then you hear the rest of the recording, which I'm sure many of your listeners listen to.
Oh yes.
Pretty captivating. The child. This event. And this is where people need to leave the room if they're not ready for it. This is not a child. It's a fetus being aborted.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to go into the details about the abortion itself, the barbaric way in which it was handled. Obviously, you know, we've got water involved after the fetus was removed from the mother.
Oh, God.
But how in the world, I mean, in terms of Eschatology deals with it's a branch of theology that deals with death and the afterlife and finality. How do you explain how a fetus through time can ideationally can come up and somehow impart the ideas and the English words "I can't breathe, help me, I couldn't breathe" electromagnetically onto something. I mean,
do you have any ideas?
No, I don't.
I sure don't either.
I'm pretty much familiar with lots of aspects of the phenomenological world and have researched a lot of it, but this one, Art, it throws a monkey wrench in everything, all the comfort level that I ever had about reality.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing has thrown a monkey wrench into a lot of things, I believe, too. And, you know, I didn't really want to believe the whole EVP thing, but I'm afraid that I do, Ed. I've looked for holes in it. I've looked for ulterior motives. I've looked carefully at the Spiritcom stuff. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to do that, but God, that's convincing.
Stuff way back when I was investigating this. But how are, that's a different, this is a horse of a different color. How in the world, when remote viewing is one of the key points here, one of the real powerful techniques and methods is to establish connectivity. How do you reconcile the idea of a fetus being able to talk?
I don't.
Being able to even communicate electromagnetically using English words that only a living child could know or an adult. I can't do that. I don't know what to do with that.
Could this have been somehow projected by any of the other participants in the incident?
The other participants we sketched. We sketched a man, evidently a doctor.
Oh, no
we sketched a mother. We sketched an assistant. And the rest I'm not going to go into because it was very gruesome and very gruesome, and it was very disturbing.
Well, now that just made that all the more disturbing. God, that's awful. All right, so you looked more generally at the whole phenomena of these voices manifesting in audio, manifesting in white noise, manifesting in the carefully planned George Meeks experiments, or just what my friends up in Utah get. What is it, Ed, that we're hearing? I mean, are we?
I think we're hearing. I think what is that? You've got there's something behind. First of all, we got an electromagnetic field. Second of all, we've got some aspect of mind behind the electromagnetic field in order to modulate it. Okay, where's the mind though? Where is the information stored? How is it transmitted? What's the connection between the recorder and the sender, if any? And these are really questions that we may or may not be able to answer using remote viewing to establish connectivity, because we may be dealing with something like the afterlife or the global mind, and we can't get into the operating system because it's what we use to do our work.
Hey, Ed, here's something that you might want to look at. I've got an 8-page article here. And the title of the article is by Christian Gravel, and it's called Do Man-Made Electromagnetic Fields Influence Human Consciousness? And it's a totally fascinating article, and in some way, certainly, EMF fields probably do or could conceivably influence consciousness, or the other way around.
Yeah, I was involved in the classified side of that for many, many years. That's one of the hats I wore in terms of science and technology intelligence officer. NEMR, it's called, non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation.
Uh-huh.
How do you weaponize that? Well, we reached a point where if you were at a good distance away, we could point a machine at you and modulate it the right way and on-off control, have you drop a cup of coffee and not know what happened to you. Now, this is non-ionizing radiation, which means that the RF is so low that it doesn't heat up water more than 0.1 degrees, and I won't go into all the technical stuff, but it's not ionizing. It doesn't strip electrons away from the nuclei of atoms. It isn't powerful, but it's about as powerful as your cell phone. And what I'm saying is that if you modulate the RF the right way, just the right way, so that it's in sync with your nervous system, and I won't go into any technical details, out you go. Now, you have to turn this back off. You have to turn this off if you use it against a human being, because a human won't be able to breathe. Their body, their nervous system won't work. So if you're pointing a weapon, let's say, hypothetical weapon, at someone, you can't keep it on without killing them, because you're scrambling their nervous system.
Uh-huh.
So it's influencing their nervous system.
What about the effect on the user of the device?
They have to be shielded, just like any other, like a high power microwave device or just regular microwave devices. You have to be Faraday shielded. You have to a copper RF suit or behind a shield.
Huh.
It's not as powerful as X-rays, but you still have to be shielded.
Mm-hmm.
Or you will undergo the effects themselves.
So anyway, you think there could be a connection between consciousness, you know, the Princeton experiments, for example, and electromagnetic radiation, and that they could have an effect on each other?
I'll tell you what we found in our work, because my sister science and remote viewing sister science is psychokinesis or telekinesis. What we found is that the way that, for instance, the way that the audience under my direction a year or so ago influenced one of the clocks in your office, right there, you remember that, I'm sure.
Yes.
What was it's more the magnetic field in sync with the mind than it is the electronic vector. It's more the magnetic vector than the electrical vector in the electromagnetic wave that's being affected, and it's also gravity. So there is, when I say gravity in terms of its linkage with the magnetic field. It's the gravity part that actually causes things to move or lift or slow down, as in the case of your clock. So mind is definitely somehow, there is definitely an electromagnetic factor component, or it's the field itself that's being influenced and or influencing. But this doesn't explain the faster than light speed at which remote viewing works. So it's something behind the idea of the electromagnetic field, and we haven't gotten to the point where we understand what it is yet. Noteworthy thing I might point out, however,
yes,
in the case of the Princeton experiments, what we did with using them as a jump-off point, there is a particular metal that very interestingly is far more susceptible to psychokinetic effects than other metals.
Huh.
And that was very strange. So maybe the electronic structure of that has something to do maybe by studying that we can gain some more insight.
Well, all of this probably is going to end up at the quantum level somehow or another. It's almost the only way you can explain the faster than light reaction. The quantum, you know, this thing of two objects worlds apart feeling or doing the same thing at exactly the same time. That's sort of a quantum effect, isn't it, Ed?
The effects are very similar. Whether or not quantum theory is explaining what's going on, I do not know. I mean, quantum theory is thrown around pretty loosely these days.
Well, it is, but I mean, two molecules doing the same thing at the same time, no matter how far separated they are.
Well, what we found out is that in terms of using human DNA, remember, I think it was 7 years ago on your show, I talked about CIA experiments trying to develop the size switch where an agent who would get caught with, let's say, a radio transmitter in the heel of their boot or something like that, or in their watch.
Yes.
It's a pretty damning thing. So why not use your mind to flip a switch somewhere and communicate using your mind?
Absolutely. Nothing to find in the boot. All right, hold on, Ed. We're at the top of yet another hour. It's amazing how time flies. Major Ed Dames, otherwise affectionately known as Dr. Doom, is my guest. It's already quite a night. So that was an abortion. My God. That makes it all that much worse. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.
At area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I wonder how many of you out there have wondered about what comes next. In other words, is it an eternal blankness? You would just never know you had been or have any awareness of anything ever again, dead and gone? Or is there something really on the other side? Is there some sort of ghostly existence? Is there an afterlife? Well, I suppose all of these really are quite good questions from Major Ed Dames. He's looked at EVP, and that sure is directly connected. I think it's directly connected to the answer to that question.
Good news.
Well, that's actually, it's a superb question. This life after death, or absolute zero, what comes after life, in a way, is it directly related to looking at EVP and finding what you find in EVP? Are we answering these questions as we look at this, Ed, or not?
I know there's some type of a relationship, but I don't know what type. I think the field of angelology is probably more apropos to the study of angels.
Yes.
Because they're there at the moment of death, and then the soul or light is gone, as well as the angels. But what's left behind many times is this electromagnetic mind pattern. It sloughs off, you know, like the shell of a caterpillar. When it transitions, it leaves this cocoon behind. Well, the cocoon is like this electromagnetic entity that thinks it's alive. That's why many people who think that they're channeling spirits who are dead,
yes,
they're channeling,
yes,
these residual energies. And you know, I noticed that you have Dr. Raymond Moody on tomorrow night.
That is correct.
He is in a much better position, I think, Art, than I, to address these questions. He has a wealth of experience in these areas, and I do not.
Well, right, except that you looked at EVP. So I wondered if what you saw with EVP, you know, added up to evidence to you. Or what does it add up to, if not...
It supports the idea that mind sloughs off, and that because you need... mind is like an electromagnetic a pattern that hangs around down here on terra firma while the light is gone.
Mm-hmm.
These entities, they have no light. They have no soul. And if you equate soul and light with life, they're not alive. They may have some type of an electromagnetic form or pattern that in many times is visible.
Okay, again, Ed, the only thing that flies in the face of that for me is the Meek's work, for example, where without question, if you buy what you were hearing, that was an ongoing, contemporary, current, responsive, in fact, the man speaking from the other side made corrections in electronic circuitry so his voice could be heard more clearly.
But so are the voices of things that are being channeled, Rampa or
but
others
that's
like that.
But that's a contemporary consciousness, Ed.
Let me give you an example. I mentioned this once before, about 4 years ago, to you. Think about this. If while you were asleep, I sedated you,
uh-huh,
and then I took, let's say, a microwave generator or any other very, very small frequency device, and I shined it through your head, and I copied every single synapse and neuronal connection, and I made a copy of that, and I took it away.
Right.
You would never know.
Right.
Let's say I put that in another biological brain, and I give it some glucose, and I shoot it with a jolt of electricity, and this bionic thing wakes up. It has no idea that it's not you, the original copy.
Well,
it doesn't know
true.
It's a copy, and yet it is. Now, is that life? It can communicate with every, and you can even teach it, but it doesn't know anything past the point.
Is that life? If it's consciousness, then I'm not sure how else is it life.
But it's some type of a copy. And it doesn't have a soul. So I agree with you. There's something there that you can interact with, just like you can interact with a machine, a computer, or a cyborg. But at what point do we stop calling something life, or do we call it life, when is it not an apple and an orange?
Well, I don't know. When it has the ability, though, to interact to the degree of actually correcting circuitry to help the communication itself. I don't know, Ed. That seems...
But we can write software to do that, Art. Medical or otherwise. We can write medical software to correct a physician as he's cutting on someone. Do you call that alive? It's an electromagnetic pattern. And when you pull the plug from that, it's got to get energy somewhere. Where is it getting its energy from? Where's the sink? Is it just the electromagnetic field in general, or is there another field, a mind field or something else? Is it, I think Dean Radin made an understatement, Dr. Dean Radin,
yes.
When he wrote his book, The Conscious Universe. I think there's more to that than even he thought about when he wrote the book.
That could be. So, in a way...
All right, if I sound confused, I am.
Well, so am I. I mean, to me, that's a personality. What I heard coming across, if you listen very carefully, and so many did, I got so many emails about that broadcast. It was conscious. It was considering. It had personality. It had emotion. It had everything that we connect with being human and being alive. In it, if you listened. I mean, it was all there, Ed.
You're talking about the Spiritcom?
Yes, sir.
I, even though it wasn't interactive communication, I felt the same way about the child's voice, Art.
Well, oh, I see.
Even though it wasn't the Spiritcom, where you have interactive communication,
right,
and a dialogue going on, which wasn't the case, but the child's voice, which was totally spontaneous and apparently random, I felt subjectively that... That sounded like a living voice, a living entity.
It sure did.
So, you know, what do we know? There's a whole lot of things out there in the universe I have to allow for, and it's like the movie Solaris, where you just accept.
All right. You are saying tonight the sky is falling, or at least part of it, and the sky is falling around November or December 2005. The beginning of the end, you write. What in the world do you mean by that?
What I mean is that one of the key reasons that I'm building up a track record on these catastrophes, these global catastrophes, is because,
yes,
I want people to realize that the end really is near in terms of life on Earth as we know it. And it's right around the corner. So when I talk about the kill shot, and when I talk about the solar flares and things like that,
yes,
I'm not kidding. It really is close. And that's, ergo, the desire to build up a track record.
All right. November, December of 2005. What
I'm saying is that when you start seeing these meteor showers, especially the one that brings the space shuttle down, that's what's next, is a very serious sequence of events that will kill a lot of people.
Yeah, why don't you go over that briefly again? You have said that when something, a meteor shower or something, forces the space shuttle down.
Down. Now, the space shuttle has a life of about 5 years. After that, it's going to be replaced by new toys, new technologies. So, and the first one's up in a few months, maybe 4 or 5 months from now at the most, if there's no more delays. So we got this window with a maximum of 5 years where what professional remote viewers are saying is that just prior to this beginning sequence of these very serious solar flares, these killer flares, you're going to see the space shuttle forced down by a meteor shower.
All right. You know, after you said that, I thought, Ed, well, okay, if the space shuttle was forced down because of the intensity of a meteor shower or something like it, then what would happen to the International Space Station?
The same thing. It might come down. It will come down not under control, as well as many, many other satellites. What I'm saying is that we are looking at the beginning of the end of this particular cycle. This age is about to end, and we just happen to be alive during it. I've been saying this for years, of course.
I'm well aware of that. So there'll be some very large event of this sort with many, many meteors entering the atmosphere?
Yeah, actually coming down to the deck, some of them. But more seriously is that there's some type of an electromagnetic linkage between the sun and the earth that's created, and I don't understand it physically, and I'm not a geophysicist. And this may be something that's unprecedented as well. But that particular event, those series of events, allows what would normally be an M-class flare or something like that, or a low-intensity X-class flare, to penetrate Earth's atmosphere and heat it up greatly.
But the thing, again, to watch for is that's very specific, the space shuttle being forced down. When you see that happen, you know that then events are going to unfold very quickly.
Very quickly, yes. Very quickly indeed.
Well,
what that will mean in terms of survival is make sure you're in an area where there's a lot of fresh water, or at least glaciers that will melt fast, and not too fast, but there. And you're going to have protection that will be underground during these periods of these very serious flares, because the Earth, some parts of the Earth will be like a rotisserie.
What about, I mean, you have chosen your little paradise there in Hawaii.
I'm moving.
Oh?
I'm moving.
You're moving?
Yeah, I have a lot of travel to do. I have some I'm traveling too much. I'll be in Japan next month and right around to the Ukraine, and I've got some things to do and places to go before the stuff hits the fan, and I'll probably end up more in the northern belts than in Polynesia.
So you're out of Polynesia for a very specific reason.
Business-wise and operationally and survival-wise, yeah, in that order.
Huh. What do you expect to befall the area where you now live?
I haven't checked it out. All I've done is use my own skills and techniques to look at where I should go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, when you say, again, let's define the sky as falling, is the sky, or November, December, is that when you're suggesting the shuttle will be forced down or likely may be forced down?
I'm not sure. We have an initial reading of December, but I have to do more work on that. It's getting close, though. And I'll have more information for you the next time I talk to you.
Again,
it's better to build up a track record. So my intent actually is to save some lives on this, and that's what the track record's for, to get people ready.
Yes, I guess so. So then, once the events begin, your reporting would be very rapid about what to expect next and how soon and all the rest of it. The timelines would tighten up?
Yes, they would tighten up indeed. Yeah.
Huh.
We're talking about the loss of a lot of people on this planet, for reasons that I've outlined on your show and in the Kill Shot video, those kind of things. By the way, speaking of videos, the Suspect Zero DVD, that movie that I was in,
yes,
that is being released Tuesday, so I'm sending you a copy for my promise.
I very much appreciate
Ben
that.
Ben Kingsley doing his thing as I have a cameo role in that movie too.
Right. I haven't had an opportunity to see it yet, but I'm looking very much forward to it, so please do send that.
I'll do that too. Do you have a copy of my Learn RV DVDs?
I believe I do.
Okay, you might want to have Ramona or somebody just peruse those and maybe give it a shot.
And how many people, you know me, I've said it to you a lot of times, I kind of would not want to, for example, review my own future. I don't want to know when I'm going to pop off planet Earth. I don't want to know that stuff. How many people do you meet don't want to know?
I'd say most everybody.
Really?
Yeah, most everybody, except very, very confident people. For instance, I have a business partner and extremely good remote viewer, Brent Miller. He has no problem remote viewing his depth. And when I have a problem remote viewing mine, but he's one individual who has no problem whatsoever. He's very confident about life and death. So he's an exception.
Could a person, this is a key question, of course, remote view the manner of their own death? And if it amounted to something other than, for example, fatal disease, if it amounted to walking in front of a truck or being in an airplane crash or something that could be prevented by taking an action, can you change?
Yes, you can, because as an individual, you can do that. Larger events, like, for instance, the Korean Peninsula event and the nuclear weapon use there, is a fait accompli, but individuals can choose not to participate in those events just as they can choose to avoid kill shot scenarios, to not be in the wrong place at the wrong time, those kinds of things, as an individual.
Huh.
But the collective, as an event, the collective is a done deal. That's why I think prophets of old are able to see so far over the horizon for these.
So the larger events really can't be stopped, but individual smaller events can be.
Yeah, individual. Yes, you can avoid. You can zig when you should not have zagged.
So the implication of that is that we're not all puppets on a string with a preordained life that we act out like little actors and actresses, right?
We have a pretty tight box, but we do have a yes/no control button, and at any given time we can go left or right within a certain narrow range, obviously, of performance and behavior. But yes, we have choices, and the problem is we don't have awareness. Our awareness isn't as great. That's why I love my job, remote viewing, because even though you may not act on the information, you have a whole lot more awareness of what's going down than you would without this. Because these tools get around the active imagination, the egoic mind, the thinking process. It's very much cut and dry. And you may not like the answers and the information, because that's what remote viewing is, the information collection skill.
Right.
You may not like it, but it's there in your face, and you can choose on whether to act on it or not.
Have you ever acted on viewing that you have done of your own rather immediate future? I'm not talking now about your death, but just something in the next few years, for example.
I've acted on medical things. I've looked at my own. A very common thing in our work is to look at a health trajectory, a
sure.
person's health. And at
sure.
any given time, what unconscious does by when you work a remote viewing session vis-a-vis your health trajectory, it shows you where a problem may be or if you need to do something to ameliorate a condition, points in priority order. If you work, say, 5 sessions, on it'll give you the most important thing first. And, yes, I've acted on that.
These things that you bring to us, like the prediction for the volcano that's on the website right now, was that done by you alone, Ed, or is this sort of a signed, sealed, delivered effort of a team?
That was done by me alone. My team is too busy. Right now, they're working on another missing child case and on a gold case. And let me check my operation sheet right here and see if they're working on anything else. Let's see. We've got a project in Japan. We have one more. We have a serial killer on the loose in Edmonton, Canada. They're tied up on that. My projects are like the catastrophe predictions and Contact, which is my capstone career project.
I know. ET Contact is
right.
What you're talking about, and
yes.
We're going to touch on that, I think, in a moment. Another thing that I'd like to ask you about, Ed, to either do if you have not yet done, or to discuss what you know about the inner Earth. We were talking about that in the first hour. Hold tight. We're here at the bottom of the hour. I really do want to know what's down there in the middle. Don't you?
songs and no return. Yeah, it's only going to take about a minute or so till the factories blot the sun out, and you're going to have to turn your lights on just to see. And then the lights are going to be neon, saying, fly our jets to paradise, and the whole damn world's going to be made of styrene.
When you hear the night wind sigh and you see the wildness flying through the gray polluted sky, there won't be no country music, there won't be no rock and roll, cause when they take away our country, they'll take away our soul.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903.
Good morning, everybody. Major Ed Dames, affectionately known as Dr. Doom, is my guest. And the message this morning is kind of doomish. The sky is falling. Part of it around November or December of 2005. Watch those shuttles carefully. I know this is a shot in the dark, quite literally, pun intended, I suppose, about the inner earth, but I recall Ed once saying that there were some, well, perhaps machines that were coming to life under the surface of Mars, and I've long, very long, been fascinated, as you know, with the inner earth, and tonight we had a story. Incidentally, I depend on all of you for these weird and unusual stories, and that's where I get them. You send them to me. So if you run into a story, the magnitude of the one I had tonight, for example, of the drilling and then the plan to go to the very center of the Earth, a real plan to do that, send them to me, artbell@aol.com or artbell@mindspring.com. But it occurred to me that either as a future project or one perhaps that Ed has already, I don't know, researched at some point in the past, we're all curious about what's inside the Earth, Ed. Have you ever looked?
Only in terms of extraterrestrial involvement. That's it. Nothing else.
Huh. With regard to Mars or Earth?
Both.
Both. And what can you tell me about ET involvement with regard to Earth?
There is extraterrestrial intelligence. There are, let's call them bases. I hate to use the mundane word, but there are operation centers in seamounts, deep in seamounts, totally inaccessible to any human. And things come and go from those seamounts.
Things come and go.
Yeah, actual machines.
There have been all kinds of reports of UFOs disappearing into the ocean or rising out of it. I've heard stories from people at sea, you know, seamen, Navy guys. They will tell in hushed tones these stories of things they have seen either come or go from the sea.
Yeah, even the military team members, way back when I was operations officer, I would task viewers and take a look at myself at some of these comings and goings. And the actual stopping points are in seamounts, very, very deep in the earth.
Huh.
And, so because there's no access, that is not one of the things I chose to use in terms of contact. I used a different tact.
Oh,
yeah. Because, I mean, there's no access there. You can describe it, but I want the real thing.
All right, it's something called Vanguard ET contact attempt, and that's coming what, in August in North America?
It is. In fact, if that's successful, and there's every reason to believe that it should be after doing this for 20 years, and If that's successful, I'm going to bring back a very prominent person to do the filming, and then I'm going to invite you to be there as a witness too.
Huh. What exactly is involved?
Watching. Just watching. That's all. They put on the show and interact, and you watch.
So
it's a wild card. We're not sure what's going to go down, but we are sure that the location is correct. And what the genesis of this was a lot of work looking at this incident that happened in September 16th, 1994, the one that John Mack, the late John Mack, wrote about the children, the school children.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
In terms of chain of custody, to know what agency we were dealing with, I use the term agency loosely. A lot of your listeners are going to hear that term, and they're going to think what you and I both know they're going to think. By agency, I mean extraterrestrial or non-human agency or interdimensional agency. Whoever orchestrated that or staged that particular appearance at the Ariel School outside of Harare, Zimbabwe.
Yes.
Whoever did that, that's what we locked on to find out where we could contact that agency. Where using a higher intelligence, in this case remote viewing, could link up with another higher intelligence. And we found two locations on the planet Earth, and one of them is in North America, not too far from where you live. But
really?
Far enough where you'd have to get a long drive or get on a plane.
Huh.
But I'll take care of that for you.
So you're saying there's going to be an incident or something that can be viewed that would be...
ground truth.
How much of an incident are we talking about? Are we talking about sightings of a vehicle? Are we talking about a landing or an actual ET presence?
The sightings idea, that I used to lead scientific teams in the Southwest, particularly in New Mexico. And we've got that. We've got that down. We've got the photographs. We've got all the measurements in terms of artifacts of, let's say, propulsion. I use that term loosely. We've done all those studies, and we've gotten flybys, actual flybys. But we're after the same thing minimally, or something unknown, minimally what those children had, and that is a CE3. We're talking about a face-to-face coffee clash and nothing less. Now, what will actually happen, we don't know. But the area is just brilliant in terms of their selection of where we should go to be. It is a brilliant, brilliant selection.
Do you want to say where?
No, I cannot at this juncture. Perhaps on another show, I'll tell you privately, but I don't want to broadcast that. The last time I talked about the hot zone in America, that zone which was on a national park got overrun with joy seekers.
Did it really?
Yes, it did.
I was not aware of that, Ed. But
the National
I guess
Park Service was not really happy with me.
No? I don't remember the what was the prediction or whatever associated with that. What did you say? Do you recall?
Well, I said that for at least 4 years, all of our recordings, and I led some pretty prominent scientists to this area.
Yes.
Until the phenomenon petered out. For instance, there's a guest that's going to be on Coast to Coast next week, and he was one of the prominent scientists, but I won't mention his name. 4 years in Chaco Canyon, New Mexico, which is a center of activity it's a total hot zone. We had all these measurements and great, great shots and flybys and all kinds of experiences, but then the phenomenon petered out, and it moved to another area, it being a lot of flybys.
Do you have any idea, Ed, why we have these so-called hot zones, why we have areas where things tend to occur for a while with great frequency and then suddenly, as you point out, shift?
Yes, we do. In fact, those studies go back to the military team when we were looking at this on behalf of NRO and NORAD. NORAD was interested in these fast walkers,
that
was the term then, and so was the NRO, CIA's, satellites in the sky.
Explaining to people who don't know, fast walkers.
A fast walker was the term, for instance, if you were in the past to run a Freedom of Information Act request against UFOs, you wouldn't get much because you did. That was not the word that we used inside the fence. We used fast walkers, which was a term that was generated at NORAD when they had something that, oh, my God, let's push the button and go up to DEFCON 1. They had to be able to differentiate between these UFOs.
Okay, again, though, Ed, fast walkers were things that were traversing either the atmosphere or just outside it at
very fast speeds.
Like 25,000 miles an hour, just out a figure. I've heard of these.
25 to 31.
1,000 miles per hour.
Right, right. And, you know, enough. But anyway, they were called fast walkers and a few other names, too. So because people didn't know that name, then the government was not deceiving anybody. It just said, oh, here's what we have on UFOs.
So there should be people out there, or have they already done it, submitting freedom of information requests for specific references to fast walkers?
Well, they did it because I mentioned it 6 years ago on your show.
Uh-huh.
But there's other names, too, that are more contemporary that are still classified. But anyway.
And these freedom of information requests came back with positive results for fast, so-called fast walkers?
They came out with a lot of blacked-out paragraphs.
Okay.
Because they're getting close to the real thing.
Yes.
But anyway, the government doesn't know what these are. But we had to try. The Psi spy unit had to try its best when we were approached by our oversight committee to gain some insight into to these things, as we've talked about many times on your show. Where were we? A mine is a terrible
well,
thing
I mean,
to lose.
Basically, we were with fast walkers. We were with Contact coming in August in North America, or, you know, a CD3.
Oh, now I remember. You wanted to know why some of these hot zones were
hot zones.
Okay.
Sure.
It has something to do with the entry points above the Earth, magnetically and gravitationally.
Oh, really?
Particularly magnetically, where things enter at these conjugate points or something like that, magnetic. I don't understand the physics at all. We may be dealing with a race that's 100 million years ahead of us nominally, so I don't have any problem saying I don't understand, but it deals with these points that are above the Earth that change from season to season.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology that some of these things use, whether they're robotic or manned, I use that term loosely, avails themselves of these particular points that change from season to season. Now, it could be something that's different than that, but that's the best that we could do, let's say, 15 years ago in trying to understand why these points were important. Now, visually on the ground, it looks really neat because, for instance, I stood there with scientists from the Skunk Works and Stanford Linear Accelerator watching, sure enough, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, zip, 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 in through these points,
yes,
these glowing things, and come right down at us. And it's great to hear the scientists say, oh, my God, they're coming our way. And I turn around and say, excuse me, Ron, did you expect anything else? Oh, my God, here they come. I said, yeah, that's why we're here. We expected this. But when this actually happens to some of these people, and when they actually see the very thing they're out in the field to photograph and to measure and record, they need a change of underwear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Believe me, I understand. I've had one very close encounter. Thank you very much. And I was in shock for a long, long time afterwards.
That was a CE2, I think.
But that was close enough for me.
I think you would like... Art, think of it. You know? I'm inviting you to a really nice...
CE3.
Yeah.
Ed, there's no question in your mind. In other words, these hot points, these areas where these things happen, because of some sort of magnetic anomaly setup or whatever it is that allows it, it couldn't be a natural phenomena at all. You've definitely ruled that out. In other words, this is extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yeah, it is indeed. But the point, the contact point that we're going to in August is not one of these hot zones. It is actually a point that appears to have been selected by an agency, let's call it extraterrestrial for now, where we go to meet them. and it has nothing to do with technology or entry and exit point.
And you're inviting me along.
The second go-round, because we're not sure what's going to happen on the first one.
I appreciate that. So if you're vaporized in the first one, then I'm safe, and we won't have a second one.
Well, actually, I'm sending in one of my minions, and I'm watching with binoculars from a distance. And, they don't come back. I'm going to run like hell.
One of your employees, Ed?
Yeah, probably my partner.
Your partner? Your highly prized partner, huh? And you'll be watching at a safe distance like a general with a pair of binoculars.
Well, you know, somebody's coming.
Oops, there he goes. Oh, God. Okay. Well, that's interesting. But you don't want press for this. You don't want a lot of people there. You want
the
this to be a private affair, huh?
Right. The second time we have three candidates, two of whom I know that are very respectable, very believable. For instance, somebody like Bert Rutan, who is very credible.
Sure.
I'm not going to be the one to report this, obviously. I'm too much of a wild card. But a very credible person needs to be there and will be there to both film and report on this, too. And then I can fade away into the background.
What do you know of the nature of this intelligence? I mean, you've apparently had some sort of communication to get this far, so you must know something of the nature of this intelligence.
They're not human, though, at least the one that we're going to contact. They are not human. Mm. I'm not even sure if they're humanoid, but they act as a sort of control system for things that happen on this planet, and they've been around a long time. Other than that, I just don't know.
Well, you could say that about angels.
Yeah. I mean, angels and aliens, they've been mixed up together a long time.
And I can see why.
Yeah.
They're both just as mysterious in a lot of ways, right? And I'm not sure they're not one and the same. Are you?
No, I'd be a liar if I said I'm certain about anything involving this particular contact. But I am certain about how we targeted it, the contact area, how we found it, what we did in order to do it, and in terms of consciousness, the mechanics and the dynamics that led to finding the area. And I will say it is a brilliant choice on their part. It is very brilliant. And I'll have more to say about that, obviously, in the future. Hopefully, one of the three candidates that I've chosen will have a lot more to say about it.
Boy, I'll tell you, I definitely wouldn't want to be the only one there. I mean, to have an experience like that actually happen to me, a CE3, to meet an alien intelligence, I'm not sure that I could do the job that I do now unless I had an awful lot of witness testimony to go along with what I was saying, Ed. If I was the only one saying that Ed led me to it and I saw it, I don't know if I could even come on and say that.
Well, we'll have a lot more. We're going to photograph this, and so when you have prominent figures who are involved in the photography,
yes,
and the videography,
yes,
in conjunction with them reporting on their own experiences, not Ed Dames, but some very prominent people, that is a very different animal, very very different.
Well, you're right. Of course, it is. It would be at the least regarded as a very major incident. Photography, lots
also,
of important people to say, yeah, I was there, I saw it, it happened.
And if there are physical things involved here, if for instance you obtain physical evidence, or you are transported somewhere where man cannot go, and you bring back, if you come back at all, something that cannot be found on this planet.
Yes.
You get the picture?
Yeah, well, I do, and it's a little grim, perhaps, if
no,
I come back
no,
at all.
It's wonderful. It's an adventure, Art. It's totally an adventure. It's a whole lot less grim than the things I've been talking about the aforementioned tonight.
I suppose, in a way, possibly.
And, Art, you and I are both, I mean, we share one thing passionately, and it's this mystery, this UFO ET mystery. I mean, you and I are both on the same sheet of music here. Think of the chance.
Well, you're right there. And it's going to be that soon. August?
August. In fact, you know, the way things are going, it better not be any later because it's not going to happen.
In other words, those ominous events that lurk toward the end of the year would, in a way, supersede
eclipse
completely such contact.
Possibly, yes. And it's a funny set of coincidences, serendipitous perhaps.
Is it a coincidence? I don't think so.
I think the timing is immaculate.
So, in other words, this contact, this E3 contact, could have something to do with forewarning, preparing, or otherwise passing information about what's about to happen.
My gut feeling, and it's just a gut feeling, is not remote viewing, because remote viewing was concentrated on actually determining the
right
site. And my gut feeling is that it has something to do with avoiding a nuclear conflagration, a World War III, a nuclear exchange.
Right.
It has something to do with turning mankind's attention to a higher intelligence and feeling a little bit more humbled and yet desirous of those toys.
That'd be a big job. Hold on, Ed. We're here at the top of the hour. I'm Art Bell, and from the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. We're about to open the lines for Major Ed Dames, and that could really mean trouble. Stay right where you are.
Sweet dreams are made of this. Who am I to disagree? I travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to...
With Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know, I saw Mars Attacks. The opportunity to participate in a CE3 event might be all right, but I'm not sure it's a good idea for somebody from Pahrump. Once again, Major Ed Dames. Ed, welcome back. I want you to get a plug in for your website and anything else you want to plug. We do that for all our guests as a sort of a thank you for coming on. I guess it's www.learnrv.com, and the RV is in capitals. Is that right?
It doesn't matter.
It shouldn't matter.
I'm an educator. I'm a teacher. And remote viewing is really gaining a foothold in society now. The PlayStation games use remote viewing as one of the so-called powers for the players. And
right.
Suspect Zero, the feature film, that was the first time the term remote viewing was used in the feature film. So it's gaining a foothold. And I encourage people to learn this. I teach it along with my professionals. The advanced training is all free. Online, and we're there every day. The DVDs are for sale, and it teaches you all the fundamentals of remote viewing, so they can order it through learnrv.com, or they can call a toll-free number and buy either the beginning DVD or the entire set.
Okay, what is the people like toll-free numbers? What is it?
1-866-607-8439.
Okay, I've got 866-607-8439, and there they can order what?
They can order the Learn RV DVD set. It's the one of a kind, the best RV instruction in the industry. I started the industry 20 years ago, so these are a set of DVDs that teach you all the fundamentals from the ground up. And then all of your questions are answered in my classroom online. All that training is free, and including the advanced training. It's one-on-one instruction, and it's near real time. And I have 7 professionals in there as well as myself.
All right. Let's go to the phones. I had a lot of people with questions. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Art, thank you for taking my call. And Major Dames, you're very fascinating to me. I was curious, could you elaborate on any more events that you have viewed for this year particularly?
All right, it is a fair question. Of course, he just added the volcano, which is on the website, and you can look at it right now. And he just had what many call a hit with the earthquake. Any more events? Of course, we've got... Well, actually, you've already given us 2, and they are the CE3 event coming in August, and then, of course, the more negative November-December beginning of the end, the sky is falling event.
Yeah, as my nom de guerre suggests, Dr. Doom, I'm mostly interested in events where there's a large loss of human life. My intent there is not to really scare, it's to attempt to save a few individuals who just might decide not to be in the office that day or take a vacation. However, having said that, there are a couple of my team members and I are forecasting a major economic collapse for the United States, and if that collapse is very abrupt, we may be able to put a date on it, and that date may be soon. So we're still working on that, however. That has nothing to do with loss of life except people jumping out of windows.
All right, but those are the major events that you see. You don't see, that's major enough, right?
Remember Y2K, when everybody was jumping up and down about that, and I told you over and over again, Art, it's going to be a non-event. Well, we use remote viewing to look at a non-event, Y2K.
You did. And that's what you said. Now, people would argue about the size of the event, and many would say, Ed, that a lot of things, because of the panic involved with Y2K, were prevented because they did the work ahead of time like they were supposed to when the panic started. So it was one that was prevented, or you can say didn't happen, but certainly a lot of programming work was done to damn well ensure it wouldn't happen.
Well, then we're dealing with a paradox.
Indeed, aren't we? Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Just spiffy.
Good deal. All right. Going back to the beginning of the show when you were talking about the EVP, I missed the Saturday show because I'm new to your show. But when Ed Dames went to remote viewing and he saw it as an abortion.
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's go back to the Christianity, the abortion picket lines type scenario. Is that, could that not be a significant calling that abortions is life, actually, that they are really taking from moment of conception?
Well, of course it could. I would certainly look at it that way. That is the essence of what you're saying, isn't it? In other words, if this was the aborted child crying out in some way that we certainly don't understand, that would be indicative of the fact that it was in fact life, intelligence, consciousness, all the things that we worry it might be when we do these things, right?
You're darn right. In that case, it would, which is very nonplussing to me. I mean, I was figuring, okay, we've got the beginning of nascent life here, but now this for me, it sheds a whole new light on the phenomenon and the act itself,
mm-hmm.
a whole new light.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Morning.
Good evening, gentlemen. I consider myself generally a skeptic with a certain caveat. You two gentlemen touched on the parallel between angelic and extraterrestrial.
That's right.
I'd like to take that same concept and apply it to remote viewing. In the Bible, you have great prophets like John, Daniel, and Elijah. None of these men considered themselves to have any gift. In other words, everything that they saw, everything that was, it was revealed to them
mm-hmm.
through God. And also, when Jesus was doing his ministry, when he was on earth, there was these two gentlemen that had an employee, and she was a psychic. And he touched her and healed her. And these two gentlemen went to, like, small claims court or whatever and wanted to get money from them because the lady no longer had the ability to do those things. And, you know, so I'm saying no one person, I believe, can learn, you know, or develop the ability to do that. And also if...
All right, hold it. Too much at once. That's a direct challenge to the whole concept of learn RV. So, Ed, why don't you respond to that? No person can learn that.
This is a skill, and it has nothing to do with the spirit. It's totally a mind skill, and what you do with it is up to you, totally up to you. I do not teach ethics. I teach remote viewing, which is not revelation. It is an information collection skill via the unconscious. We are not prophets, and we're not even psychics. Simply a cognitive skill.
Do you see any parallel between the prophets, for example, the ones he named,
no.
biblically, and the ability to remote view? Any connection? No,
no, I don't. Because their prophecy was the result of revelation. Something anointed their eyes, and that's certainly not the case with mine. Nobody's been around to anoint my eyes. I had to work my butt off to do what we do. So there isn't any connection.
All right, fair answer.
And by the way, I'm a Christian, so...
I can tell. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Dames, Christian.
Is that me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Art, and hi, Ed. The cognitive brain is awesome, isn't it? I was just wondering, do you know that we pick the baby at time of conception or just before that picks their own mother? And I was just wondering if you knew that.
Huh, good question. Ed, there are many, many, many who believe that children actually pick their parents.
I don't know, Art. I've heard that, of course, many times, but I simply don't know. I'm a very simple man, and I do not know.
Okay, fair enough. International Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, I've done not a lot of reading about Tesla, but the electromagnetic theory and
mm-hmm.
time travel and also through space to other planets. And I just wondered if Ed had read, like the Mon Project, of course, which is similar to the Philadelphia Experiment, and a book that I think Ed would be very interested in reading called Flying Saucers Have Landed by Desmond Leslie and George Adaminsky. And they go into detail about how the pyramids were lifted and, of course, ETs, and they have pictures, and they've actually talked to, this guy's talked to a Venetian.
Do you have a specific question, sir?
Well, yes, actually. He said that, I just wondered if he had read these articles.
Okay. That is the question. Ed?
Yeah, I'm familiar with all that work. My emphasis is on replicability and meeting the criteria of the Western scientific method, which unfortunately we have to meet. That's replicability. If we have to be able to do the same thing every time and be in control of it, and in the case of ETs, we're going to have to be able to photograph that and interact with it on call in order for science and the public to really accept it. Otherwise, it's just our word against somebody else's.
I've been wondering a lot about that lately. In this day and age of being able to morph anything into photography. I'm not even sure the level of proof that it would take. I mean, if you had a number of credible witnesses and even pictures, Ed, I'm not sure in this modern day and age that people would believe, that that would be sufficient for people to believe.
You need material from somewhere else. It's going to have to be material. I agree.
Yeah, and I guess the, what is it, the examination they do is going to have to show it's off-world material, and even then, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it is. It will be, I guarantee it.
We really live in a very strange day and age, Ed, where people just are prepared to disbelieve everything. Put in front of them, proven, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but there are ways. I mean, for instance, if you can demonstrate real time that you've moved something from Earth to Mars and it can be observed from this planet using scientific tools.
Yeah,
that's the kind of thing that will probably have to happen.
All right, first-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Dames. Hi.
Hi, Alan Helsley, Bentonville, Arkansas. I'm selling the life-after-death thing.
Yes.
Have you ever considered auras into that? Like if you take a leaf and you cut part of it off and they photograph the aura, the whole leaf still appears, the outline anyway, or a hand, you cut a finger off, you photograph the aura.
That's all true.
Yeah. Carillion photography. And so what that implies is that what I call a pre-quantum field, that's my name for it, a pre-quantum field, where you have a pattern that is just prior to light. It's in another, let's say, another dimension, for lack of a better word. And that pattern is there. And then it manifests as light, but the pattern is there. I think Rupert Sheldrake would agree with me on this.
Right. So wouldn't that indicate life after death? Because if you eliminate part of something, that part has died, right?
It doesn't support life after death. It just supports the phenomenon as observed.
Yeah.
And to anything else is inference.
But what do you think that phenomena means? I mean, to cut off a part of a leaf or somebody's finger, and then to still have the entire appendage appear in
Carillion. It means the pattern exists regardless of the material. It means the pattern, the template for that, whether it's a human being, a DNA, or a leaf, the pattern exists somewhere else that is, for all intents and purposes, invisible, and that the manifestation of the pattern is light and then matter, light, energy, matter.
Wow. All right, Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Art.
Hi.
Major Dames, it's such a thrill to talk to you. You might know that Father Andrew Wingate told George Norrie that heaven had said that Pope John Paul II was not actually going to die but was going to go into exile.
Yes.
So I wonder if you know, is Pope John Paul really dead? And if you say he is, then do you know if in the next few years he is going to come back to life as himself?
Okay. I don't know why Father Wingate made that statement, and I don't know how he has, what statements he's made about that since, but my view is the Pope definitely died, and that's about it for me. And you have any comment, Ed? I don't know whether you caught that on the program.
Remote viewing has limitations, Art, and one of the limitations is when we deal with death and what is called in the vernacular continuity of consciousness, those ideas, a remote viewer can't grasp ideas that are beyond life, because we're not programmed to apperceive the patterns that are associated, apparently, with those kinds of afterlife things. We have some evidence, but I won't get into that. So there we have no chain of custody on those
right.
kinds of ideas. The ideas are so totally beyond our ken.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, yes. Can you tell me, in your opinion, would a meteor shower, if we had a meteor shower, do you feel it could make our atmosphere radioactive or poisoning to our existence as far as with a meteor shower? You were talking about it a while ago. In other words,
he's been talking about a meteor shower, sir, that would be so serious it would force a shuttle down. possibly even the International Space Station.
Right.
And it's a big marker to look at. So I guess, Ed, this caller is saying, well, could the meteors introduce some biological agent, or would there be further harm from them than just the meteors falling?
Actually, it's an interesting question, because we do have remote viewing sessions to indicate there is something that happens to our atmosphere that is totally unprecedented, and yes, it does deal with some type of, for lack of a better word, poison, but it is not biological.
Hmm.
And I don't understand the data, so I don't talk about things I don't understand.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Ed. This is Tom in San Diego. I took your class 2 years ago, popsicles. But that class, it's kind of a use-it-or-lose-it type of thing. And last time you were on the air, you mentioned that you have new ways of teaching using a method to reach coordinates and time. So I'm wondering, how would I restart your lessons?
The LearnRV DVDs. Go to LearnRV.com. Look at the DVDs and all of that, and that is a heavy-duty, very comprehensive review of everything from the fundamentals all the way up through the beginning of the advanced stages. Look at those and see what you need to do in terms of which single DVD you need, or whether you need to review the whole set.
All right. Well, I picked up on what he said that I thought was interesting, Ed. He said he took one of your classes, and it's a use-it-or-lose-it kind of proposition. Okay, well, from that, I conclude that he did learn how to do remote viewing.
Yeah, but it's like playing the piano or martial arts. Or
exactly. And so the question was, do you lose it if you don't use it?
You bet. You have to resurrect the skills. It's like music. I'm not a musician, but I know enough about it to know that if you don't practice, you get really rusty.
Mm.
The best remote viewers are the ones that work the most, work correctly. And there's a lot of schools out there that teach the wrong way.
So the skill sets can continue to improve with practice. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Our confidence level goes way up. That's why people like me have no problem sitting down in front of a television camera. We're doing this in Tokyo next month. They can give us any target we want, as long as it's correctly ginned up, as the search term is correct, whether it's a missing child or an event or something like that, or what's broken on the subway, we have no problem sitting down, you know, and working the problem, knowing that we'll get the right answer, especially with the more time we put on the target.
I've heard that young physicists, for example, have a very short shelf life of brilliance, that people in various fields they use, intellectual prowess, have a very short shelf life, and they have a very few years where they're really very, very good. And I wonder, just a quick answer, because we're coming up on the break, if that's true of RVing as well, that there's a sort of a few years of extreme ability, and then does it trail off, or does it keep getting better?
It keeps getting better.
It keeps getting better. If you keep practicing, it keeps getting better.
You go through the roof.
Wow. All right. My guest is Major Ed Dames, affectionately known by colleagues as Dr. Doom. And if you've been listening this morning, I'm sure by now you understand why that affectionate reference is used. I'm Art Bell.
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. What a pleasure to be with you. I am Art Bell, and Ed Dames is my guest, Major Ed Dames, the very controversial Ed Dames. And if you've been listening tonight, you know why. Once again, Major Ed Dames. Ed, is there anything in the program thus far that you wanted to cover that you haven't?
Nothing I can think of, Art.
All right. Well, lots of people want to talk to you. So, first-time caller line, your turn with Major Ed Dames.
Me, sir.
Hello. Yes, you,
hello.
Sir.
Hi. Mr. Bell, Mr. Dames, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Dames, are you familiar with an author? I'm probably going to murder his name. Zechariah Sitchin, is that it?
Yeah, I am.
And the book, The Twelfth Planet.
I am.
All right. Do you see any kind of cosmic coincidence or whatnot of the year 2012, the planet Nairobi, the Hebrew year 3760, our year zero, all this combining into one big old thing in the...
Not to interrupt you too much, but I'm not wedded to the year of 2012, but I do agree with Dr. Sitchin on the Nibiru, the existence of Nibiru, and it does appear that there is a large passing space body, whether or not it's called Nibiru or not, that is going to have an extreme effect on this planet and has had at times in the past, depending on how close it's passed to Earth, coming and going.
But no connection to 2012. All right, caller.
Another question about our moon. I'm not familiar with the exact writings, but it is said that Plato once wrote of a time before the moon. Is it possible, in some crazy way, that the moon is actually like the original Death Star? I've heard the moon landings were fake, that the moon was hollow and radio waves were bounced off of it. In your opinion, sir, do you see any connection with the moon as a base for Greys, that are reptilians, whatever?
There's a lot of things on the moon, on the surface of the moon, and over the last 7 years or so on this show, I've broached some of those things. In fact, there has been activity by at least sentient machines on the moon for very, very long periods of time. In fact, things that were there upwards of a million years ago and left have left their trash behind. I'm not talking about the U.S. space program either. I'm saying that there have been things on the moon for a long, long time.
If that's true, is our government very much aware of it, NASA aware of it? Has all this information been held from us, Ed?
All right, I'm going to have to come to the conclusion that because I know the resolution of the Clementine missions, that there's no way they could not have seen what remote viewers have sketched in craters on the moon. There's just no way, because Clementine has covered virtually 98% of the surface of the moon. So they've got to be withholding it. The Air Force has to be withholding it or pretending that they don't see it.
Either way.
Because some of this stuff is right on the surface.
Got it. Got it. Ed, Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Hello. Hi, hello, y'all. I just have a comment that might be insightful to what you said about the EVP thing.
Sure.
There is a scientist and a teacher of other doctors who taught at Yale University. He's got lots of credentials and lots of books out there. This book called Fields of Life, where he had a meter device or a measuring device that could measure the force field around a person. So if you were going to break your leg, let's say, and it's no time on the other side, you could be breaking your leg 2 or 3 days in advance. It would show up as an anomaly on this measuring device. Also, if a mother-to-be, were pregnant, it would show up as a second little force field floating in and out of the womb area. So sometimes it was in the womb, and sometimes it was in the force field of the mother. So whether we have life as the Catholics believe or as some other people believe, I just thought it would give you some insight. This book called Fields of Life by Harold Saxon Burr should be replicated because science should be that way. The man who was on your show some weeks, months ago, Cleve Baxter.
Yes.
He is probably new, Harold Saxon Burr, and he is the one who taught the FBI about the lie detectors and how to do that. He has the same kinds of measuring devices. He'd be an excellent man to do that replicating.
Okay. So
I thought you would be interested in that.
I am. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Yes. Hi. I have two things to ask you, but first of all, let me say this first. First of all, I think we'd be pretty shallow to even consider that we're the only life form in space. For example, you take the ancient pyramids, I forgot how many thousand years ago, carvings in the side of a man operating some kind of a craft with hand controls and things down the back.
Oh, yes.
Similar to a spacecraft. This is back before they even had as much as a hammer. So they had the idea for somewhere. But anyway, two things I want to ask was, one, in your opinion, because I do respect your opinion, you're very, very, pretty brave to come out in public with your things. Anyway, do you feel that we would recognize or extraterrestrial life if we saw it, or have we? As well as, does the government ever has the government ever harassed you in any way about your opinions?
All right. Would we recognize extraterrestrial life? If it was very alien, obviously we would. Otherwise, it's a good question. Ed?
Well, if they're non-humanoid, we're going to, and they have weapons, we'll certainly recognize them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. All right. And on the second question, have you, it is a curious question, since you've left the employ of the government, Ed, have you ever been harassed by the government?
Actually, no. It's the other way around. I'm the keeper of the keys.
You've harassed the government.
No, I can harass them, yes. I'll tell you why, because I'm the keeper of the keys. I own all the advanced technology that they gave up, and the last thing in the world they want to do is shut me down, because they may need me really fast. Let's say the vice president gets kidnapped or something like that. They have nowhere else to turn, and I know wherever I speak, because I've been at celestial levels of intelligence. And many of my friends are generals, so...
And you believe if the situation were dire enough, they would call upon you?
In a heartbeat.
Many wonder why, then, have they not called upon you with respect to Osama bin Laden?
That's another story. Osama bin... That's not what I'm talking about. That's not an emergency.
Well... it might be a political emergency, or it seems like it was. It's now seemingly more unimportant every day.
We would be called upon as a tactic of desperation, just like we were in the Sci-Spy unit, when things got when no intelligence was available on a situation that was dire, then we would be called immediately.
In fact, I sort of would like to wonder in public why we're not searching harder, why there's not more pressure to find Osama bin Laden. It's kind of one of those things that it's been pushed to the very back burner. We haven't found him. Maybe that's the reason. We can't find him, and if we can't find him, then there's no point in having pressure about it. It'll just disturb people at the top.
And it gives us a reason to keep on keeping on, the status quo pro ante.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Dames. Hi.
Good evening, Art Bell and Major Dames.
Good evening.
This is Suleiman. I'm calling from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Yes, sir.
Listening to you on CFUN, 1410 AM. And I want to let you know, Ed Dames, that I'm one of your greatest supporters. You have a lot of friends that really are have become knowledgeable in regards to the information that you've disseminated. And I'm from Los Angeles, and you would be shocked at the amount of Americans that are in British Columbia who listened to your information that you disseminated about a safe place to go to over a couple of years ago on the Art Bell Show.
You don't happen to be the son of a professor, do you?
No.
Okay, one of my students, a famous professor, had a son by your name.
Okay.
Continue on. Sorry, enter.
I do have a title as World Event Psychic, and the reason why I'm calling you is that I had access to your tapes a couple of years ago. I applied it to my psychic abilities, and it enhanced those to the point that when Jessica Lunsford's case was initiated there in Florida, in the Citrus County, Florida, when she was kidnapped on February the 23rd, I'm the one that called on March the 5th in a conference call with someone who witnessed a call to Tara Smith, and I'm the one that gave the sheriff department the information where she was located, right across the street from where she was abducted, the man that did it, and that she was buried. And WFLA was going to do a story on me, and the sheriff department told me that my information was inconsequential, yet everything that they are now saying about the case, where she was buried, the man, and everything else, I gave them that particular information.
I actually remember that, and I know that that's the case. I've often said, especially in my classroom, my online classroom, you get somebody like yourself who's a natural psychic, naturally gifted. I can turn them into an all-star rather than just a professional if
right.
they toe the line.
Speaking of gifted individuals, and it's just only a little off topic, not much. Ed, have you seen the program Medium yet?
I don't watch television on it.
It's a program you should at least look at. Trust me. This is done so well. It takes all the hocus-pocus baloney out of it, and it's just done in such a human way that it's really worth your seeing if you decide to poke your face in front of the big tube one day. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
You know those sound machines that you get the ocean and all that stuff from that you put?
Sure.
Well, I have one of those, and one morning I heard a voice coming out of it.
No, that's all right.
No, it was a human voice. It wasn't a spirit. It was the guy saying, "Can anybody hear me?" It was plugged into the wall.
You're kidding.
And I'm thinking, is that like maybe a ham radio or somebody? So I turned it off. I didn't say anything. I didn't know what it was.
No, ma'am, it would not have been a ham radio operator. That would have been a CB-er.
Okay, well, also, I have heard spirits talking to me through the sound, the ocean thing I hear.
Well, actually, you're really on to something, Ed. It's just another delivery of a kind of a white noise, in a way, isn't it?
It's an audio output, and it uses and it's got an oscillator in it. In order for us to, as a remote viewer, in fact, anybody that's trained in this, even to an intermediate stage, my students could take a particular event. It would have to be a specific event, like, for instance, that one, Can Anybody Hear Me event in connection with you and that device, and track it back, establish connectivity quite easily, and determine whether it was something ambiguous or enigmatic as opposed to a CB operator or somebody.
Well, yes, but still, it's a generating a sound, and it could be modulated in the same way a radio signal coming out of a speaker or anything else could be, right?
Yes, but in my experience, RF it pulls it in better. RF oscillator pulls it in better than something on a sonic generator like that. However, it doesn't rule out because they're both electromagnetic in nature.
Absolutely.
They both have an EM field around them.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi. Hello? Hello? Going once. Going twice. International line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Where are you calling from, please?
Paris, France.
Paris.
Oh, hello. How are you? I spoke with you about 2 weeks ago about the energy crisis. How are
I
you?
Recall. Oh, God,
how
I love Paris.
Please indulge me. I've had the great opportunity of being able to correspond and speak with personally Joseph McMonagall. I'm sure Mr. Dames knows Joseph.
Yeah, Joe worked in the Sci-Spy unit and ran many,
yes, of,
many
course.
Of the projects for me.
If you could indulge me, I'd like to share with you a letter that was written to Joseph McMonagall and his subsequent response to my letter. And I'm certainly not here to question your veracity or the credibility of your guest here, but I'd like to share, if you have a moment, I'd like to share a letter to him, which basically is only a synopsis of one of the remote viewing experiences I did have while I was...
Okay,
granted.
But rather than reading two letters, sir, just give us the gist of it.
May I just... It's a lot easier. It's very short. It'll take up the same time as any guest.
All right, go.
Okay, thank you very much. Hello, Joseph. I'm a Canadian living in Paris, France. Since being illuminated by the book Evolution's End by Joseph Chilton Pierce, I became aware of anomalies, that occurred in my dream and semi-dream states. I wish to describe a few of these to you. I'll only describe one. When I was living in the French countryside, specifically in Burgundy, I had a strange dream. I must preface this experience by telling you that we did not have television, only a monitor to view films, and did not have direct access to the news. My wife was in Paris doing a photo shoot, and I was alone. In my dream, I was on a ferry crossing from mainland Australia to Hobart, the capital of Tasmania. That alone seems strange in retrospect. As I debarked at the port of Hobart, there was an outdoor cafe. It was very sunny, and there must have been between 20 and 30 people there. I looked into the eyes of several of the clients and felt profoundly the ambience of the environment. In the next scene, I saw a blood-drenched river filled with broken glass and debris. In the next scene, I was sobbing in the presence of the premier of Tasmania, who was a female. I said, how could something like this happen here? Why? I don't understand. How is this possible? I woke up with tears in my eyes. I thought, what a strange dream. I eventually just let it go as a nightmare. 2 days after the dream, my agent at the time, Meyer Hyman, called me from Paris. The first words that literally came out of his mouth were the following. Did you hear what happened in Australia today?
All right. Sorry. We're running out of time.
Okay. Basically, I received a letter from Joseph McMonagle, and he said the following. As I've tried to explain in many of my books and writings, etc., there is probably no way to improve the ability, which is why I've always tried to stay away from the subject of training. When I get into it, all I ever do is piss people off. Evidence shows that the degree of skill usually demonstrated by someone walking in the door is about the level of skill that can be expected forever for that person. People who go around telling people that they can train them and make them better at being psychic or doing RV are simply lying to them.
All right. Hold
okay.
it right there.
Go into my classroom, my online classroom, and look at the new student's work, and then you'll question both Joe and yourself. Take a look at the trained, these are new students who have walked in the door a while ago, a few weeks ago, who are now outperforming Joe McMonagle. And then reassess the letter.
Why do you think that Joe has that?
It's ego. It's all ego. I have one, he has one, but the problem is Joe is a natural psychic. He does not know how to train people to do what he does, and therefore he cannot, so he knows nothing about training, and he would not let me teach him. Because of ego.
Huh.
And I fired Joe from projects that I worked because he insisted on things that were not in the satellite photography that he said they were there. I said, Joe, if they're there, they're invisible.
Hmm. So, that's a pretty sharp disagreement that I was not aware of.
And I'd like to point out his first book, Mind Trek, in the interview in the back of the first edition, he was specifically asked, were you a remote viewer for the U.S. Army? He said, no. It's in the book, and he also said the U.S. Army did not have a program. On the second edition, when he saw that I did not go to prison, he changed. All of a sudden, he became a remote viewer, and the Army did have a program. That is speaking with a forked tongue.
A little disagreement there. First-time caller line, quick question for Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Yeah, the quick question. A few years ago, me and some friends were playing with the Ouija board. We asked if there was life after death, and it came up, phantoms fill the skies. And that kind of put a goosebumps through me like I'm getting right now talking about it. And, you ever heard of cloud busting?
Well, already you've given us too much. Let's take up Ouija boards for a second, Ed. Most people view them as a portal to open, you know, doors that you might not want open. Do you view them that way? Is there something special about a Ouija board?
Oh yes, they're very special. They replicate a pattern, and they imply an intent, and mind is very powerful. And that particular pattern is something that is very interesting. Allegorically speaking, it's like shining a bright searchlight up into a very, very dark world where entities reside, and those entities you do not want coming down into your house.
All right, good
enough.
Totally
negative.
Listen, we're out of time. Show's over. I do want to give out your 800 number again for materials that you can buy at LearnRV. It's LearnRV.com or toll-free number 866-607-8439, correct?
Correct.
Okay, buddy. As always, thank you for being on the program. Thanks for the predictions. We'll all be watching like hawks, and I'll talk to you next time.
I'll see you with the gold.
Take care, my friend. Yeah, with the gold. That's right, the gold. Don't forget the gold. What a birthday present. Well, from the high desert till tomorrow night, I'm Art Bell. Good night.
Midnight in the desert. Shadows. shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert,